The Raking, available now on Amazon Prime, iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, Xbox, and cable on demand.
All right, so like it says here, the final requires us to go into the field and study a chosen myth or legend.
Oh, this one's in Joshua Tree. Locals dubbed it The Rake because of its extraordinary long fingers and nails like claws.
So peaceful here.
That's probably what all those people said too, right before they disappeared.
Did you hear something?
Probably just a rodent.
Welcome to Shockwaves, episode number 43. I'm one of your hosts, Rob G. I'm sitting here with Mr. Elric Kane.
How's it going, man?
It goes great.
Can't wait for that raking.
Also with us, Becca McKendry.
What up?
Hi.
That was really loud.
That was it.
What
was
up?
Very loud. You're very enthusiastic.
I am.
Mr. Ryan Turek as well.
Well, hello.
Holy
smokes. Happy we have sponsors.
I'm happy too. And not only that, but we are back to you. This is going to be a big topic week again.
Yeah.
And we have a very special co-host with us. Not even a guest. He was already a guest on Killer POV.
I love this man.
We talked about his career, but we thought nobody better can talk about horror anthologies, especially creating the perfect horror anthology than Mr. Darren Scott.
Glad to be here.
Yes, there he is.
Darren is the guy that when, like, I'm at a horror party, like the horror industry parties, I always get excited when I see Darren because if I can't talk to anybody else, I can talk to Darren for hours.
Well, you know.
Wait a minute. That sounds like a fallback.
No, it's true. It's like
when I see Darren, I beeline for him first above all celebrities because I know I can talk to him for hours.
My point was, matter what's going on, I can always talk to Darren. And he's into Nunsploitation films. Might be the only other person in this room who has seen School of the Holy Beast.
I think Darren's into every subgenre.
Yeah.
That's what I love about talking to you at the bars is like no matter what subgenre of film, and actually that's why I like when you and Elric are together because you both get all like, you know, like all
we do get a little
arms, arms wagging.
You guys, your arms flail around like Muppets.
Things get handsy between
tongues
us.
Tongues flapping.
I knock stuff over.
That's all right. So we're going to do what we usually do, which is talk about what we've seen and then tackle the topic. But actually, before anything, after this episode airs, just a reminder, Thursday, March 23rd, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our friends at Cavity Colors are unleashing some new Shockwaves merchandise.
Oh, my gosh. They are beautiful.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome shirts.
Devin Whitehead, really awesome artist.
One of my favorite artists and totally took us off guard. We had no idea that they
were let me just talk about Devin for a second because I would run into Devin at every single screening, any signing event, any convention, any Dark Delicacies thing. Super sweet guy, really nice, but you know, I always just saw him as the dude that's like hauling a bag full of stuff to get signed all the time. And then out of the clear blue, Lunaris Records puts out this Cemetery Man record.
Yeah.
And on the front on the artwork, the cover is this beautiful rendition of Della Morte, Della More. And I was like, "Oh, who did that?" And they're like, "Oh, Devin Whitehead." And I look him up and I'm like, what?
I know that dude.
I
showed you.
Super, super, like, just talented guy.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. He used to come in to Amoeba when I worked there years ago, and he was always looking for VHS. So I always remember him as like, oh, the VHS guy. And then I think we were friends on Facebook. Yeah. I actually bought some of his really, really, really early prints because I saw his artwork, and I was like, are you, like, selling those? And he's like, I could.
Night of the Demons. I back it up.
Night of the Demons.
He did Night of the Demons as well, and that one blew me away as well. Yeah. What a talented dude. And he did this great piece for a new Shockwave shirt. So what you'll be able to get is the Shocker design or just a regular Shockwaves logo tee. And what Cavity Colors is also putting out is just an amazing enamel pin on a VHS backer.
Yeah, that's
backing
really
card.
Cool.
Yeah, backing super card, cool. Yeah.
And we didn't know he was a listener. I didn't know he was a listener.
Who, Devin?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that part of it. And that makes it more special when somebody's doing it because they get
actually
what
care.
You're doing.
Yeah.
Super cool.
So support your favorite podcast, Shockwaves.
Yes, and Cavity Colors.
And Cavity Colors.
Thank you, Aaron Crawford.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Order up some goods next week and we'll remind you when they're on sale.
Yeah. All righty.
Especially the ladies. Because I always see those, like, small sizes never sell. Ladies small never sells. I don't know why. Come on, horror fans.
So, lot to talk about, but I'm going to kick off with a mini topic, only because I know Ryan and I have seen this film already. But new Kong movie was out.
New
Skull
Kong.
Island.
Yeah.
Did really well this weekend.
It did.
And non-spoilers, obviously, because I – this is one of those movies that I wasn't – like anticipating, like I was like, oh yeah, if I have time, I'll go check it out. I'm sure it's cool and all that. But you know, I'm a moderate King Kong fan over the years. But I went to see this at 3D IMAX here and at the Chinese and was blown away. I just had so much fun. It turned me into a 12-year-old monster kid again. And I immediately went home and marathoned every King Kong movie in completely different order. So I want to talk about that briefly, but yeah, what did you think, Ryan?
I think Kong is fantastic. I've seen like a lot of haters out there and you know, it's just kind of nitpicky character stuff. And I completely agree. They're all things that I agree with and completely get it. But, man, Kong really blew Godzilla out of the water. No disrespect to Gareth Edwards. Because as much as I enjoyed Godzilla, it, you know, what Kong delivered was on the monster madness, you know, on the monster craziness. And what was great, too, is all the characters had some modicum of energy, whereas Godzilla did not.
Yeah.
All the humans in Godzilla were just kind of like walking through it and doing their thing. And it felt very somber, whereas this just felt like Sunday movie, high adventure fun. And just delivered on the Kong stuff. It was like, sure, Brie Larson didn't have much to do, but Kong looked great, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, that Tom Hiddleston scene seemed a little goofy, but Kong beat the shit out of this monster. You know, it was like, all the monster stuff outweighed the character stuff. And I just wanted escapism, and I found it, you know?
Yeah.
And all I got to say is Mike Dougherty, you better fucking step up, dude.
I know.
Because if you're paving the way for this Kong versus Godzilla movie, and you're doing the second Godzilla, you got to make Godzilla a pretty worthy foe, because this Kong is smart as a whip, man.
Yeah.
He's smart, and he's very I just thought he was very emotive and awesome and cool. I mean, just it was beautiful. It was a beautiful, cool, fun movie. And what I like about Godzilla and Kong is that they're very pro-nature. It's always about – what they haven't forgotten is that a lot of these movies are about – man just fucking up planet Earth, and here's how they're going to pay for that, you know?
Yeah,
It shows very early on in Kong. They did it all through Godzilla, but I just love pro-nature movies.
Now,
pro-Mother Earth, guys.
Hippie. I know Kong's in it, but I was excited because it looked like there were a lot of other creatures in it as well. So there are.
Many.
Okay.
I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear any
That's
of that
what's
part.
Cool is like almost every like 10 or 15 minutes, like you're going to get some you're cool get monster something. Action no matter cool. what.
And even if it's just Godzilla just like walking through a river.
Yeah.
Just doing his thing.
It's like it's Kong. He's in this movie Kong. A lot. You know. Whereas he shows up an hour into both the 76 version and the Peter Jackson no. one. I'm curious, does anyone have a favorite Kong movie?
My dad introduced me to King Kong really early on.
Original or 76?
The original, the original. I saw the 76 one. God, I want to see – did they ever re-release it? Because I want to say I watched it on a big screen when I was super young.
I have that memory, too.
So, I mean, like I feel like I'd seen it on a big screen. But 33 was the one that my dad introduced me to. And I think we saw it on like on Laserdisc or something like that. And I might have been a little bit too young to fully appreciate it, because King Kong moves at its own pace, you know? It moves at a very sluggish kind of pace. But once the stop motion stuff kind of kicks in, you enjoy it. It wasn't until I was in my college years that I fully appreciated King Kong for what it was, and you know, the artistry and the fun that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Darren, do you have a favorite King Kong movie?
I like the first one,
the original. Yeah,
and I like this one. Yeah. I got a big kick out of it. I think the most intense scene was watching Kong and Sam Jackson stare each other down, the glare down.
Yeah.
And as far on the human side, I mean, the fights were incredible.
Yeah,
awesome.
You really got to step your game up from this point on.
You're just blown
on.
Away by the fights. And Tom Hiddleston managed to get through an entire film where every shot of him, he's posing. I mean, he's got all these poses.
Tan,
no matter what's happening.
Rugged looking.
You know, King Kong's killing them all.
He's just
chilling. He's got a cool pose.
Yeah.
It was a Bond audition.
What's great is one, I had a lot of faith in this movie because the filmmaker's first movie, Kings of Summer, is phenomenal.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen Kings of Summer, it's just really great. Mm-hmm. And he brought just a great sense of style, and he cast fantastically. Shea Whigham is great in this. Riley steals the show.
The whole cast is solid.
I mean, holy crap. So cool.
I must confess, I have great appreciation for the original, but I've never been a Kong fan. Uh-huh. But I am a giant monster fan.
You might like this.
Which is why I was kind of are there enough giant monsters in this to keep me interested?
I like I don't love the 76 one, but I do like all the sexuality and weird
stuff
about
Jessica it. I love Jessica Lange in it.
Jessica Lange.
Yeah, she's crazy. Amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you can get a more beautiful woman on screen than her. And you know what? Jeff Bridges is pretty in that movie, too.
Yeah,
it's like the two most pretty people ever put on film. I just revisit every day. God, they're ridiculously good looking. Mm-hmm. It's not fair.
But I love the way the original Kong looks and feels. The actual sequences with Kong are just like some of the greatest thing in all of movies.
In this one, you know, Kong, he feels more creature than ape. You know, he's also got a sense of humanity to him too.
That's my big criticism. I wrote a big article because I did go back and watch all the movies again, and you know, like I vaguely remembered King Kong versus Godzilla and Escapes, which are kind of fun, goofy, like Saturday morning movies to me. But you know, the thing that really motivated me was our friends Andrew Cash and Brian Collins, both who've been on the show, kind of gotten a little fight over the Peter Jackson outline, basically Cash is like, it's a cinematic masterpiece and don't let anyone tell you about anything else. And Brian Collins is like, it's an overindulgent piece of shit. Don't let Andrew Cash tell you anything.
Wow.
So they're going back and forth. And I was like, you know what? I don't remember. All I know is it's one of those movies where I'll pick up the box and see that like 4-hour running time.
Sure.
And put it back.
It's a commitment. Like, I saw it once when it first came out, and I have never even thought about watching it again because it's 4 hours long. Well, and I don't need to.
But that's the extended version, right?
The extended, but the original is still 3 hours.
Yeah.
The original one.
So
this is what I did. This is for all you listening out there if you've been scared to revisit it, because I wanted to see it again because I sort of liked it. Pretend it's Peter Jackson's epic 8-part Netflix series and watch it in 30-minute chunks. And it's actually kind of amazing.
Wow.
Like, seriously, if you watch it in 30-minute chunks, where you're like, wow, they spent a lot of money on this show. You know? And then something happens, and then you're like, all right, I'll be back. It was hilarious. Literally, me and my roommate were watching it over the course of an entire day, where we'd stop for a half hour, go do other shit, come back. And then I remember by the time we got to the finale, we're like, this movie is never going to end.
Did you do the 4-hour one?
Yeah, we did the extended one. And you know what? Look, there's some great stuff in it. You know, because obviously it's like Peter Jackson is throwing everything from his early days. You see a little bit of that bad taste, Dead Alive Peter Jackson, and then everything that he learned from Lord of the Rings. It's like every filmmaking technique you could throw into that movie is there. So on a technical level, it's beautiful. It's great. Is it overindulgent? You know what? Yeah, for a movie. But if it was, if it was a TV series, it would be totally acceptable that this isn't the thing. What struck me about it, and this is just my personal preference about Kong, is – the reason I don't like that version of him is because he's just a giant gorilla.
He's a big monkey.
He's a big monkey that does, you know, he's on all fours, and he kind of like, there's a scene with him and what's her name? Naomi Watts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the ice?
The ice scene I rather like.
I mean,
great.
I think that's a great scene.
It's the first time he's messing with her where he keeps like pushing her over and he's like doing, you know, gorilla-like behavior. But to me, Kong is a monster. He's a creature. So I like the Kong that's in the original movie. I like the Kong that's in the 76 one, and I like the Kong in the new movie.
Right.
When I saw the new movie, I was like, oh, that's a freaking monster. In the same way that Godzilla isn't just a big T-Rex, he's Godzilla. He's his own thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my thing with Kong, is he has to be his own version of that creature.
And what I like about it, too, is the contrast to Godzilla. Godzilla is more of a protector. You know, Godzilla protects the Earth from whatever threat there is. Kong is just the brawler, you know? He just wants to go about his life, do his thing, but there's always these fucking giant monsters that get in his way. And that's the sense that I got from, his life on the island, you know? It's just like, he wanders around, he hangs out, he's super lonely, And every once in a while, some giant monster's like, yo, let's step up. And then he takes him out. And that's a terrible existence for poor Kong, you know?
Right, right.
So that was kind of like my empathy for him was like just in the sense that it's like, dude, you're always fighting, man. You just need some love, you know?
Well, love the new movie, and I'm curious to hear what you guys think and if you've been revisiting the old movies as well. So, all right, Ryan, why don't you kick us off? What else did you see?
I saw a film I haven't seen since college, and that was the 1989 redo of The Phantom of the Opera with Robert Englund.
Which I rather enjoyed when I first saw it, and then I rewatched it when they did the re-release a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, it's
so Scream Factory put this out, and it's been sitting in shrink wrap since it came out, and I finally was like, honey, let's watch Phantom of the Opera. Jill Schoelen, Robert Englund, Dwight Little from Halloween 4 directed it. And you know what I got to say, guys? They really went for it.
The production design, man, they really tried.
They really went for it. But, you know, it's like Jill Schoelen does not fit in. I love her to death. Love her to death. And she really went for it. But every time she opened her mouth, it was just like, you do not fit in with all this caliber of back supporting. Bill Nighy is in this. Mm. You know, it's like all of these supporting characters. And then Robert Englund is very good. But they decided to Freddy Krueger him up, where he's just like...
Pretty much looks like Freddy, yeah.
He looks like Freddy, but and beyond that, like, they give him all these one-liners. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm the Phantom, oh, sing for me. And then he'll kill a motherfucker and just be like, oh, what a slice of life. And it's like, oh, no, or something. And that was my... I just made that up. Don't quote me on that.
writing that down.
I believe that was...
Phantom of the Opera 2.
But it's just like, oh, my goodness. You know, and it goes on, and the movie is like an hour and 30 minutes. Yeah. It's wow. hour 30 minutes, but it feels long.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot that there's a contemporary story that bookends things. So my first reaction was, oh, I forgot it's a contemporary story. Oh, nope, it's a period story. When are we going back to the contemporary story again? And then you get up to it later on. But you know what? Kudos for them for taking that big swing. I don't think it necessarily works. But it was good to revisit just because it also solidified for me that the Phantom of the Opera is not one of my favorite stories and or characters ever.
It's really quite, it's a rather dry story. And I do have to say there was like a big resurgence in the late 1980s when they relaunched it on Broadway and everybody was like, oh my gosh, Andrew Lloyd Webber, he's a genius. Phantom of the Opera.
It was a good show to see live. That.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I love seeing it live.
Like when the chandelier fell live, yeah, I remember being like, oh my God, it's like crazy.
And I love Lon Chaney's performance. I think that's just one of the best things ever on screen, his performance. Anything since that, I haven't liked any of the adaptations.
It feels so stale to me, just as a character. It's right up there with The Mummy, you know, and you guys know
the Hammer one's my favorite.
But he's got love in his heart.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And the things that Chaney went through to deform his face.
Totally.
From a pure just pain standpoint.
Yeah, the fishing.
Now
the fishing
all you have to do is lose 40 pounds to get an Oscar.
And no one just... He should have gotten one for doing that.
That's true.
Oh, man. All right, well, Phantom. There we go.
Phantom. There you go.
Buy your copy of Scream Factory. Maybe.
So I'm sorry, guys. Maybe.
So I watched The Lore. Which I had seen large parts of at Fantasia last year, but I hadn't watched the entire thing yet, which is why I hadn't mentioned it on the show. I still don't know what to make of this movie now that I've seen the whole thing. My biggest take is apparently all men just want to fuck mermaids.
Yes.
Because like as soon as the mermaids enter the screen, I think that one of the very first lines of the movie is, her vagina is here.
And he asks, where's her hole?
Yeah, and they point to it. Yeah. And then it becomes like a running, I can't even say it's like a running gag. It's just like an accepted plot point of, did you fuck the mermaid yet?
Is this Polish?
So weird. Yeah Polish. Yeah,
Eastern European humor for you.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but it is a mermaid musical. It's the story of the Little Mermaid, which was completely bastardized by Disney. But when I was a kid, I remember having this, I'll call it like fairy tale-ish theater where they did like a real telling of the mermaid. It was like a Polish cartoon I had. And it was disturbing because in it, she cuts off her legs to be in love with him, to be with him. And then he doesn't love her back. So she turns to sea foam at the end and dies on the sea.
Wait, isn't that Boxing Helena?
It's pretty much Boxing Helena. It's pretty much that. But yeah, it's this really like truly brutal story. So it's that set in this really sleazy nightclub scene.
Is it at all scary? Is it a horror film in that way, or is it more just
they're,
imagery?
They're blood.
It's gory.
They do need to eat every once in a while. So the fangs come out.
There's some gore to it, and again, she has to cut off her legs at one point. It's just part of the story.
Does it work as a musical? I know you're the horror musical girl.
It works as a musical in the same way as like Phantom of the Paradise. It's not a musical as in like I'm walking through town and I'm singing a song and everybody behind me starts dancing.
It's not the Village People musical.
No, it's very much like we are on stage performing and this is our music and now we're done. But the stage performances are very elaborate. Like I really want to go to this nightclub wherever it may be because it's like – total burlesque shows. And they get involved with these kind of sleazy nightclub characters, but they really like that life. So they have plans to, you know, swim off elsewhere, but they decide to stay there. And then there's the whole falling in love, which matches up with the real story.
Not to be too crass, but where is the hole?
It's on the tail, little lower down on the right-hand side.
So it like, okay, weird.
But their tails aren't hot. They're not like sexy tails. They're coelacanths. They look like sardines. Coelacanths.
Yeah, they're like, they got these long coelacanth tails. Yeah. And they're really gnarly. The girls are great. The actresses are fantastic. Yeah. One of them just graduated to another film that I had seen recently. And I thought she was amazing. It just reminded me of like a fun, weird, fucked up Baz Luhrmann does Little Mermaid.
That's it. It's bizarre, and it's. I think a lot of it might be like a cultural. I'm not quite getting it. Like everybody just wanting to fuck the mermaid thing. I was like, is this a thing I'm not aware of? Like the very first thing is like,
what about
where's
the
her
scales?
Hole? They talk about that too. They have
that
scales.
Cause some pain.
I would think so. But at one point,
so drunk
at one point they rip one off. Like that's actually in the love sequence where one of the girls actually pulls out one of her scales and gives it to a guy. So apparently you can do it. It's not quite as painful as like a tooth or something, but it looked like a hair. Like it still looked like it stung a little.
Yeah. Okay.
And where is this film now? Is this on VOD now? Or?
It is. It did a really limited theatrical in early February. I'm pretty sure it's coming to VOD shortly.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's definitely a weird ride. I actually recommend everyone checking it out. I would compare parts of the visuals to the Neon Demon, where it's just like grandiose and colorful for just the sake of being grandiose and colorful.
What about you, Darren? See anything new?
I've seen new things, but they're not obscure or anything. I've just had a chance to go. I went and saw Logan.
Okay.
Nice.
And enjoyed it. A great deal.
I haven't seen it yet. So
thought it was fantastic.
It's next on my list, yeah.
You know, and Hugh Jackman is incredible in it.
Yeah.
I mean, he really brings it
for his goodbye.
Like,
his goodbye to this character.
This is old man Logan. And I mean,
but that my feeling was that's as a fan of the comics, that's when that character started to me. Like he was old. Like if you cast this from the start, he would have been that age. This should be the first of the series.
But you know
in
what?
A lot of ways.
It's appropriate to talk about here because it may be the first superhero slasher movie. Mm. I mean, it is ultra violent.
Cool.
Ultra violent.
Nice.
And so of course I had to see it.
It was made all the more obvious to me because there was a dude in front of me with his like 10-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt really bad because they must drop the F-bomb like 100 times in the first 20 minutes. Like it's excessive. And it wouldn't bother me normally, but the fact that there was a little kid sitting in front of me.
What's the rating?
It's R.
That parent had to smuggle that kid
He should
have
known.
If he's 10, he's heard that word.
Yeah. I guess, but I don't know. But yeah, it is hyper-violent if you want to see some
I got to see that.
Violence.
I enjoyed that. And last thing I saw in the theater besides that was Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Which I thought was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
Loved the movie. And I went and saw it by myself up in Santa Barbara, in fact. And as we were coming out of the theater, you know, it's me and the Santa Barbara crowd. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm the only black guy there. So as we're coming out, there's a big crowd. And I just decided to announce, I think I'm moving back to Inglewood. I got a big laugh.
Nice.
You should have acted like one of the changed guys. Like you've been altered.
Right.
What's
right.
really quite
hello,
great film.
Sir.
How fabulous.
Are you,
did you
enjoying
enjoy
the picture show?
Yes.
It is a real, such a confident debut, right? Like
oh,
I can't
incredible.
Remember a film at that. Well, you know, It Follows was also super confident, but this had such a voice and something to say.
Totally.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, the It Follows guy directed a feature before that, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he had made a very different type of feature,
Elric, what do you got?
I saw a couple of things. This one was a new one. I didn't really realize it was horror. It's debatable whether it is, but it was released to Shudder finally, and it was from last year. I was trying to see it last year before when we were making our final list because I'd heard it's kind of fringe. It was called Always Shine, and it looked like a riff on like a Mulholland Drive and Persona, that kind of two-woman almost switching identity kind of roles within a movie. It's this actress-director called Sophia Tackle who started on all the old Swanberg movies. And I remember her from that, and I remember she made this little indie called Green that I actually really liked. So I was interested. It was on my radar. I saw one of our listeners listed as their favorite film of last year, off the charts. It's one of those movies where I love everything it's going for and didn't believe a single thing in it, like at all. Like you like everything about it, I'm like, oh, that's exactly the kind of movie I want to see. And you got these two really good actresses. The actress from Black Mirror is my favorite. It was in my top 10 movies last year, San Junipero, the nerdy girl. She's awesome. Mackenzie Davis or whatever it is. The two girls are both great. They go up to a cabin. They're both very competitive actresses, and one's getting more work in slasher films and stuff. The other one's not really working, and she's super jealous. And they just go up to Big Bear, and they're going to spend a weekend away from the boyfriend. And it's just instantly things are so kind of rotten between them. There's no like build up to that to me that it's the things they're saying to each other. I just it lost me too quick, even though it's played for complete realism. I just there's a line I wrote down because it's just pure gold though. Basically, she's missed out on this role from this indie guy she saw, and she yells at her saying, "You can't even help me get a part in an avant-garde short." And I was like, I'm writing that line down. You know, its intentions are great. It's actually more when it tries to go to a kind of a horror thing that's when I'm just like, yeah, it just doesn't have – it wasn't grounded in the way it needed to be to work. But I think some people are really responding to it. It could be just that's their kind of aesthetic. You know, it could almost be in that Fessenden world, but it just didn't quite come together for me. But it is on, it just came to Shudder, and it's one I'd been, you know,
Oscilloscope
waiting to see.
Yeah,
very cool.
A lot of good talent in there. And also she does show some really nice visual flourishes, especially kind of the editing of it goes for something kind of fun and alive. But and also it could be that I've seen all the influences that it's riffing, and I like all of those movies more. You know what I mean? I love Persona. I love Mulholland Drive. I love those kind of movies. So for me, maybe when you're really going so close to something, maybe you're just, you know, maybe too ambitious in that sense. So for me, it didn't quite work, but somebody out, our listener is probably going to love it. So
nice. Yeah.
We'll check that out.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
What else you got, Rob?
The only other thing I wanted to talk about this week was South by Southwest. Is it still happening? It's still happening. And the pilot for American Gods premiered there. I didn't see it at South by Southwest, but I may have seen it in advance. And I'm not going to get too much into this, but this is the new show from Brian Fuller, who was on our show several weeks back. And it's based on the Neil Gaiman book, who is most famous for, you know, the Sandman comics and stuff like that. And this pilot, the pilot episode is directed by David Slade, 30 Days a Night. It is, and this
Who also
is,
did the pilot of Hannibal.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I remember that.
And many of the episodes.
Yes. So we throw this word around a lot, but it absolutely applies. This is one of the most bonkers pilots I've ever seen. And I don't want to give away too much. I mean, if you know the book, the story, it's what's funny about it is I know Neil Gaiman for mostly the Sandman, kind of like the fantastical sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm a huge fan of like I'm going to make a comparison to Preacher. I love Garth Ennis and the stuff he does because it's so wild and like violent and like, you know, loaded with like really adult stuff. Like
yeah,
sex
I loved
stuff.
Preacher as a book. Yeah,
I did. Now Preacher the show, I can't get into.
No,
I don't know what it is about.
Did you finish it? I got through it, but it was a chore.
I watched the first three. However, American Gods is everything I wished Preacher was.
Cool. Mm.
It is like the version of Preacher done right. We've seen what Fuller can do with like Hannibal and his previous shows. This is like fully unleashed. Like the violence in the opening scene, which like goes back to like this like Viking backstory. Like there's literally a shot of a slow motion cut off arm in the middle of battle flying up to the moonlight. like I laughed a lot. And not because, you know, the average person is not going to laugh, but it's just I laughed because the excessive violence and gore in it was crazy. And basically the story is a guy who's in jail and he's like 2 days away from getting out to go back and, you know, reconnect with his wife and kid and his best friend and all that. And of course, they all die horribly in a car accident before he gets out. But then, you know, it's his journey to get back to the funeral and all that. And he kind of meets this strange character that very vaguely asks him to work for him.
And that's Ian McShane?
Yes.
Who I just love.
It's terrific. And, you know, again, the thing I loved about Preacher is it's just like these weird, quirky characters that you could never imagine. And it goes for the fantastic. And I didn't know that Neil Gaiman was capable of doing Garth Ennis style material, or maybe that's just the way it's interpreted. But this show is amazing. It's going to be on Stars. I think it premieres April 30th. Mm,
cool.
And I mean, again, between the violence, the sex, there was one sex scene again that I laughed out loud at because you would never imagine what happens to these two characters and when they're engaged. But it's great. It's really great. And if you love Fuller, like this is. I think this is the best thing he's ever done.
That's awesome.
If you get to the end of Preacher, it does get pretty good. Like once
I did tape
them
all.
There's a hump in the middle.
I'm waiting for the ideal time to just marathon Preacher.
Because it's coming back, so.
Yeah, and hope that it'll just stick with
me. The one character they just completely nail with Cassidy is like almost better than even, which is hard to believe. I always thought Dennis Leary back then.
But I think I told you that, like when I was watching it with my roommate, and by the third episode, I was like, you do get that Cassidy's a vampire. He's like, no, I had no idea. I just thought he was like a crazy dude that like bit people.
But they get there.
Well, they failed if you can't even tell who the vampire is of the bunch, you know. But anyway, Ryan.
yes. I saw Village of the Damned, 1960. Every once in a while, you just
original?
Need to kind of
awesome.
You just
film.
Need to revisit a black and white classic.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice.
And I don't. There was no other drive to do that other than I haven't seen it in a while. And man, does this film hold up?
It totally
the movie
rocks. It's a great
holds
film.
Up so well. It is really, really well done. If you guys don't know the story of Village of the Damned, it's just about this like little sleepy town in which everybody just drops, just keels over for several hours, completely unconscious. Outsiders, if they cross over a certain barrier to go into this town, they'll also drop and just fall and slip away into like a little sleep. But several hours later, everybody wakes back up and everything's fine. Until the women start reporting that they're all pregnant. That applies to the 17-year-old. That applies to the woman whose husband just came back from a war. And, you know, maybe she was sleeping around. This applies to the virgin. It applies to everybody. Mm. And somehow they're mysteriously pregnant. Obviously, this sends everybody into a panic. It dissolves relationships. And when they all give birth, it's to these little pasty, you know, blonde-haired kids, and they all look the same, and they all act really weird, and they all have glowy eyes that make you do things. So they have this little bit of mind control to it. But what you discover is there's just this an outside force that's just kind of penetrating Earth or humanity in a certain way.
I love
way.
How you just used the word penetrate.
Oh, shut up.
That was like perfectly played.
And so, you know, there's just like it's a film about a lot of paranoia. And when you have these really innocent children who can read your mind and control your mind, that just escalates things like big time. And obviously, it kind of what's great about Village of the Damned is it explores all possibilities. It lives up to its promise of the idea, and it's based on John Wyndham's novel The Midwich Cuckoos, and it just like really explores the relationships. The outside paranoia, maybe it's somebody this, maybe it's another country, maybe it's alien race, you know, it's all these things that really play out, you know, and it even boils down to the kind of infighting that happens in the town, you know. One guy tries to like take a shot at these kids and tries to kill them.
Of course.
And
they're wreaking havoc.
They're wreaking havoc. And then you learn also that they're also very polite. They're very polite.
They're super
kids.
Polite.
Super polite. So, but you also learn what happens to an entire town because you discover that this is happening all over the world. And what happened to this one town where they were like, no, we got to take these kids out. And it's horrifying. Once you learn, like, oh my God, they did that. So if you haven't seen it, I would recommend checking it
Absolutely.
Out. It's really, really well done. It made me kind of want to revisit John Carpenter's version of it. Just for thoroughness. What I also want me to do is also track down Children of the Damned, which I haven't seen in ages either.
I have those on a... I still have the double laser.
Double laser. My dad had that too. Yeah,
double laser.
That's how I was introduced to it because that was the first time I ever watched Village of the Damned, and I was like, "Oh my God, are there more?" And he's like, "Well, there's children."
So what's the scoop with that one? Is it a direct sequel or?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think
and
I've
it's good.
Seen
it's good. It's not as good as Village.
No,
it's good.
It's good. Yeah,
okay. It's good. I mean, Village of the Damned's almost perfect movie. Yeah. The only thing that's missing from it for me is they should have had a. blonde mailman who's like the only blonde guy in town.
And then, so everybody was like, just, oh, it was Frank.
The Fabio.
They slaughter him. You know, we should have got that name, but you know.
It's such a good movie. And what's amazing about it too is it's 77 minutes long. It's it gets in,
nice
it gets
spot.
Out, you know, and you're done. Really good.
Beautiful.
Nice.
All right, Beckett?
I watched Sugar Hill.
Oh.
So I've been revisiting a lot of Sam Arkoff AAP stuff, which is why I watched She Creature last week. So I started this week working through some of his blaxploitation films. So I rewatched Scream Bacula Scream, which is okay. It's not as good as Blackula, but
I think that's a way better made
film. You like Scream Blackula? I agree with that. No, the filmmaking is better. I didn't think that the actual storyline was as good as the original Blackula.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I like the first one better, but the second one is a better
it's
movie.
Much
and the
second
one's,
yeah.
movie, second one's yeah. got Pam Grier, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a win right there. Yeah.
Now, Sugar Hill, as far as like blaxploitation horror films go, like everyone usually points to Blackula or Abby started getting some more press now. But I've always been a huge fan of Sugar Hill, so that's the one that I rewatched this week. 1974, it was definitely under the AIP Arkoff banner. One of the most distinctive, it follows that whole kind of most of the blaxploitation films had this kind of rage revenge thing going on where somebody gets killed or wronged and then it's all about seeking revenge on them. This one happens to be done with Voodoo God, who gives this woman the power to bring about a whole army of voodoo zombies whenever she wants to wreak havoc on the people that she's trying to take down. What is most distinctive about Sugar Hill, in addition to the voodoo thing and the fact that the voodoo priestess is the mother from the Jeffersons, which is just kind of wonderful to begin with. But in it, the zombies, even though that they still have kind of a very zombie-ish thing where they're all pale and pasty and covered with spider webs, their eyes, they have covered over with these mirrored orbs. Mm. And so it's really frightening. Like, I've only seen that done. Maya Darren did that in one of her shorts. Meshes of the Afternoon did it. And there's
I think
this,
there's Invasion of the Bee Woman, or one of those movies that maybe had something like that.
I know that there's also this experimental filmmaker from the 70s I used to love called Sun Ra. Mm. And he made this film called Space is the Place. Which is really trippy, and he did it in that too. But
and if you guys are listening to this, me and Beck are starting an avant-garde project. It's going to be super obscure,
totally
just for the cool kids.
Really obscure.
The group shot is going to have you guys wearing these like silver orbs in your
silver
eyes.
Orbs.
We only play Kraftwerk as the intro music.
But it's an effective tool because like when you're staring at the zombies, you're like seeing yourself back. It's very effective. And so what is otherwise kind of these standard zombies covered in dust and spider webs get really scary because of these silvery orby eyes, and the soundtrack rocks. So that's Sugar Hill.
I've seen that image come up a lot and just have never seen it.
It's honestly, I like it better than Blackula. Hmm.
Let me tell you, this is my opinion, what the best blaxploitation horror film is, J.D.'s Revenge.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. The ghost story.
I don't think I've seen that.
Re-release recently.
I think I saw that in the new boat.
I think Elijah, a friend, did all the extras, I remember. He always used to rave about that one, I think. And
I love J.D.'s Revenge.
Did Elijah – I know he did Ganja and Hess.
I think he did a lot. I think he does everything. Between him and Jim Koons, you got one of them.
They did all of the bonus features.
I started J.D.'s Revenge a long time ago when I just went through a phase where you just watch anything you could get for exploitation. But I remember it being really fun. And like at the time, maybe it was kind of campy, but just the idea of a ghost private detective was really cool.
Oh, my God. I remember the Avenging Disco Godfather also having some horror tones because it was all about people having trips on angel dust and being stuck in a PCP world. So it would cut to these like frightening, nightmarish scenes. I remember that having a lot of like kind of creepy moments in it.
You watch some weird shit.
I do watch some weird shit.
That's why I like you. That's a good thing. You know what? Actually, I watched this. This is a really cool movie. And I didn't know it's playing on Amazon. It looks HD. So I'd never even heard of this. It's the 80s movie called Pulse with Cliff DeYoung and Joey Lawrence.
Tell me more about this. I feel like I should be watching it.
It's so fun. So I looked up the director. Really interesting. His only other credits besides this movie are all of the short films that George Lucas made at USC. So they co-directed all these films in college together. And then he made this one film, Joey Lawrence's little brother, who's really good as it. Joey Lawrence and his little brother's in it too. But Joey Lawrence, when he's about 10, and he's a really good kid actor. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You forget because we knew him as a 16-year-old kind of too cool for school. But
he was in a lot of cheesy TV shows.
Yeah, Blossom and everything. But in this, as a kid actor, he's perfect. He's like wide-eyed, and you kind of feel for him. But this is a really – it's a weird horror film because it's not scary. It's literally about an electrical pulse that comes from the sky in the opening kind of montage, and it gets into the neighbor's house. And then across the road, basically this neighbor in a house is destroying his house like with an axe and a hammer. And everyone in suburbia is outside looking at their house going, what is going on? And eventually the guy just like fries himself and is dead. And they're like, oh, what happened to the neighbors? So Jerry Lawrence comes to stay with his divorced dad, which is Cliff DeYoung, who's awesome. And he basically they start seeing the same electrical pulses. Like it's almost like a, I guess, you know, like Terror Vision and things like that if you didn't have monsters, right. Physical monsters. But there's some pulse anything electrical. But there's these sequences that are shot. I mean, the thing is the film is shot so well that you're watching going like, why did you guys make this? Because on one hand, you have like no real payoff monster. You just have electricity itself, microwaves. It was definitely probably going, oh, we should be scared of being plugged in. At one point, somebody even goes, you got to unplug, man. Yeah. And I thought to myself, that's very now. You know, it's like very. Now, like, but it's shot so well, especially if it goes into like a TV or into the circuit. The close up, like macro lens stuff, is just like you're like, okay, wow, this guy knew how to shoot like things that should be boring as shit, somehow took on a life. But there's a great scene where he's like watching a VHS and then this weird signal comes out and it starts scanning him. And there's actually a lot of trauma. There's the guy's wife, new wife, so Joey Lawrence's stepmom gets stuck in a shower and like the water is on the hottest level and she's like being scalded to death and things are just getting kind of intense. It's a cool little movie. I think
is it worth a blind buy?
Well, I mean, I honestly, I would.
I've never seen it,
but it's on Amazon.
I'm gonna make a blind Amazon rental. Yeah,
yeah. I remember the VHS.
Yeah,
cover
I think it cost $2
so
on here.
Yeah, $2.99.
I really liked watching it that way. I don't know if I would own it to watch again, but it's probably borders in that like sci-fi horror. But I thought it was really cool.
Yeah,
like, it's one of those ones I hadn't heard of. And then suddenly after I watch it, suddenly people were posting, oh, I just bought this new Blu-ray. So I had no idea at time.
Yeah, because one of those like weird companies put it out where it's like $5 on Amazon for the Blu-ray. So it's one of those like, screw it, it's $5. I'll get it, I guess.
Yeah, I think people – and just – this is like quick aside. It just also happens that this week for the first time I played like proper virtual reality, like in one of those really expensive suits and everything. And it just blew my fucking mind. I was somebody who was like, oh, who cares? I don't. And when I actually did it, I was like, oh, my God. Like if this gets photorealist – everything's done, like because it's
then
just
the pulse will come.
Yeah, the pulse
you,
will really come.
You know?
Well, apparently this Friday, Belko Experiment comes out in theaters on Friday.
Awesome.
So there's VR experience that goes with it that's like making its rounds, and it's going to come to the office, and we're all going to try it within the office. But I heard it's like one of the best.
Yeah, it's available. I think on Xbox right now because I was like, can I get that? I have like the Google board,
right,
can I try?
I'm very
it at
excited
home,
to see
and
what they do.
You have to have the fancy setup to try it, but it looked good.
That's cool.
I have one more if you want to go around.
I got one more.
Yeah.
Go,
yeah, let's take it.
I'm done.
So, you know what? I revisited The Gate.
Mm. Yes.
Since the Vestron Blu-ray came out. I did The Gate and Evil Dead 2 kind of back to back. The Evil Dead 2 because it was the 30th anniversary this week.
Like the stuff that you're watching. Right?
Yeah, he's
on a good roll this week.
Darren, I like The Gate.
High five.
The Gate's great.
Forever for The Gate to come out in good format.
And The Gate's also celebrating its 30th anniversary this week. But you know what? I forgot what a kitchen sink movie this is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's like it's part kid adventure movie, kid meddling with something movie, a dissertation on loss. Just because, you know, it's just all about, we lost the dog, we lost my best friend's mom.
Kids
it's
next like, door's mom's
yeah,
dead.
Yeah, he's all messed up. And you have demons, you've got zombies, you've got backmasking, you've got...
That Satanist metal.
Backwards playing records,
yeah,
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
messages,
you've got
messages.
The dead zombie in the wall.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board. You're like, all these things. And then in the middle of it... You got a little baby Steven Dorff. Pitches for a little face.
Well, I think we need to get this director because between that and I, Madman, which was one of my biggest surprises on the second factory.
He's a quirky dude.
Is Timor based in L.A.?
Yeah, he's around here. Yeah.
Okay, we need him in.
I try. You know what? I gotta try I, Madman again. I tried and I couldn't get through
movie.
It. Anyways, The Gate is a surprisingly really good movie that holds up really well, even though it's kind of like scene after scene of just weirdness going on. You know, there's no, I don't feel like there's any kind of forward momentum. It's just these kids being bombarded by the supernatural. You know, there's no goal at the end for them to achieve other than, holy crap, mom and dad are coming home soon. We better close
as
up this
kid,
hole.
That's an important
goal. We fucked up the house. There's a hole in the floor. Yeah.
And then, I love the closet moment. Where they come out of the walls and closets.
Totally,
it's terrifying.
Totally,
it's
so scary.
Now, have you seen The Gate 2? Also directed by?
No,
I will lend you the DVD.
Please. I've never seen it. Strange aside, one of the filmmakers we're working with, he texts me out of the blue and he goes, so my sound designer, his older sister is the sister in The Gate.
Whoa.
And I was like, whoa. That's amazing. Anyways, The Gate is definitely worth a look. The Blu-ray is fantastic. It's just one of those fun movies that just, you know, slides along with the Monster Squad and other, you know. Mm-hmm.
It was a perfect movie for the Pacific Theater in Hollywood, which no longer exists, but that's where I saw that film and so many offbeat genre thing, the demon double bill played there and everything. Missed that theater a lot. It was great.
And the effects are great. Like the demon designs and the minions. And all.
The rever or what do they call it? The rear screen that they used with the minions.
Right.
It looks gorgeous.
When they're like getting stepped on, they're all running around.
Well, that one shot where the carpenter from the, you know, from the wall falls and just breaks into all the little minions.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just,
it's gorgeous.
That effect is amazing.
Is that out now or are we?
It's out now.
There's this, and also the giant, you know, the giant demon that comes pouring out of the floor, you know.
He's got these little arms.
But the funny thing is that moment, it's really surreal and really unusual because Stephen Dorff is sitting there going, like, being absolutely terrified. And this demon's just kind of, like, just pondering his existence.
Yeah, like, who's this dude?
Hey, what the fuck is this? Yeah, it's a really weird movie, and the kind of the performance that Dorff gives is pretty good. I mean, like he's actually a little kid, you know. After the light as a feather, stiff as a board moment, what does he do? He cries and runs away.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's a terrifying moment for a little kid, you know.
Yeah.
But it's great. That's great. And Evil Dead 2. I watched it and I was like, this is like washing my hands. Like I know every crevice and every turn and every. It's just a natural movie to me now. And I said to Ciara, I was like, I don't think there's any other film that I've seen more than Evil Dead 2.
I agree with you.
Like, I think I'm okay. Wow. Maybe on my deathbed, I'll say, show me Evil Dead 2.
But here's the thing.
I'll just go, and I'll just die.
Now, have you ever watched it with the commentary?
Oh, yeah.
Because that is my favorite commentary of all time.
It's great.
It's like great. Bruce, Sam, I think Greg Nicotero, Scott Spiegel, the writer. And like literally, I mean, they ruin the movie for you because they point out every mistake and flaw they made, when the roof's not there and now I can never unsee that. But I think the opening is like, is it not true about this thing, Sam? And he's like, that's correct. That is not true. Or like the wording of it. But my favorite is when the two characters, I forget their names, but they arrive on the plane. Producer Rob Tapper cameos as the guy that's trying to open the plane door for them.
Oh.
And if you watch, and they point it out in the commentary, he can't get the door open. So it's this entire long one shot. It's like 2 minutes long. And Scott's like, I wish you never told me that because now I never unsee it. So literally this entire shot, Rob is trying desperately to open this door and can't do it. And Sam's like, he's still there to this day. Like just the commentary. the way that they kept ripping on each other is great.
Wow.
So, Becca?
Well, mine came about because a couple of weeks ago we ran a video on Blumhouse.com and it was like the 5 goriest Japanese films or something like that. And someone messaged me right afterwards and was like, I can't believe God's left hand, the devil's right hand is not on the list.
Yeah,
and
Becca, like what?
Yeah, that's like what was I thinking? So fine, the gauntlet was thrown. So I watched
Brand
God's left hand, the devil's right hand from 2006. And like Gate, this was kind of when I was researching it. Everything was like, oh, it's like it's a manga for teenagers. This is like a teenage thing. And this, I do not know what type of teenagers they have over in Japan. This was freaking intense and gory.
Wow.
So it is about a boy who can see images of other people doing evil things. So he receives everything evil that you're doing throughout your day. He receives the images and he goes through the victim's pain. And at one point, a very small girls are getting killed. And he starts receiving all the images and he gets like stigmata from it where these wounds on him start bleeding and he ends up in a coma. He is talking to his sister while in the coma through a broken cell phone trying to help her solve the murders and find the serial killer before he kills again. And he senses that he's related to the killer. So you get the idea that it's kind of like one of his relatives. This thing was so freaking crazy. Hmm. It's harsh and intense and just ugly and brutal. But at the same time, it's almost smart and witty simultaneously. I'm totally intrigued by it now. I really want to read the manga.
I'm looking this up on IMDb, and the synopsis is, what's scary is being a human being. And what's scary is being myself. Truly so horrifying things reside inside oneself.
Yeah.
The work asks if you can stand the inescapable terror.
And somehow that sums up the movie.
And it's a terrible synopsis.
Where did you see this? Is this a streaming or a disc or where?
No,
this
I got the DVD.
Oh, okay.
But I have As no Becca idea does. If it's streaming anywhere
she
else.
She blind buys this weird shit.
I did. I blind bought this off Amazon, and I will now be selling it back to Amazon so somebody can buy my used copy because I do Fair. Not need to see this movie more than once. It will stick Whoa. With me forever.
Wow.
It was so fucked up and so gory. It was definitely, I'll say, Battle Royale-ish. Huh. If you like Battle Royale.
But I love Battle Royale.
Yeah, I love it too, which is why I'm like now obsessed with this and need to read the mangas. But it's one of these things like if you were reading about Battle Royale and someone was putting it like, oh, well, that's what teenagers read. And then you watch it and you're like, what? Mm, and that's kind of how this I was approached to this was like, okay, 16-year-olds. Nope. This is like messed me up. So God's left hand, the devil's right.
I like that title.
Yeah.
You know what? Sometimes there's a Scream Factory title that everyone else has seen and they grew up on and you just haven't seen it. I had never seen Evil Speak.
And, what?
And, yes. guys, holy
High five to Elric.
Shit, hell yeah.
One of my faves.
You can say thanks to Dick Grinnell because it's literally one of his favorites. We were looking between that
movie.
And some other movie and he goes, oh, you guys haven't seen this? You have to see this. And I looked at him afterwards and go, oh, really, man?
This is the Clint
holy
Howard
shit.
One, right?
Yeah, this is Clint Howard and the devil and but a computer.
But some of the brain head trauma that goes on in this movie, holy shit. It is a weird, weird movie.
It is funny.
And Clint Howard's actually really, you know, for Clint Howard, he actually gives a you know pretty good, solid performance, but it's just like even setting it at a weird military base, and it's set on you know the ancient ruins of what is the guy's name, the cult leader, basically religious leader,
Richard Mull.
Yeah, wearing I don't think his character's name.
It's not Lester Crowley, it's nothing
real, but he's got a great name like Sebastian or something.
Father Esteban.
Yeah, Father Esteban. Thank you.
But it has an amazing beheading in the first like minute where you're like, holy shit, it's like a gulping tee shot into the ocean of a woman's head, where you're like, oh my, I was like, oh, she's really cute. And then boom, her head was gone.
I just loved the computer inclusion because it's one thing.
Yeah,
if Clint
crazy.
Howard resurrects a demon in the basement of his school, okay, that's a great movie right there.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's a computer involved,
the graphics
it's
are
so
cool.
like 1980s next level.
Yeah, because basically they're bringing back this the demon guy and he's coming back, but he comes back through the computer. And the graphics are just totally insane 80s computer graphics coming at you. But it builds to – there's a certain parts where I'm like, oh, man, this is a pretty – because it has these weird pigs and nude woman being eaten by like wild pigs.
Yeah.
Like where did the pigs come from?
Bathroom
we
scene,
needed
yeah.
the pigs.
Oh my God, the pigs. But when you get to that last, like, you know, the last 15, 20 minutes, it all pays off. It's kind of an amazing final carnage scene.
That's what I remember, sweet revenge,
you know?
I didn't know. I was like, I don't know if I like this or not, but the finale is just so insane that I was like, all right, now.
Floating around with
a fucking
sword.
That's the thing. I walked away the same way. Like, I don't know if this is my movie, but man, I respect the hell out of the effects and the way it pushed the boundaries at the end.
It's on a list that we did for Blumhouse today. On my 10 hidden gems amongst the video nasties list, and that's
a gem.
There.
It's definitely a holy fucking shit movie.
Were you brushing up for trivia this week by watching that one?
I have been. Also, the other show, we're doing a little anniversary thing for that.
Oh,
so it
nice.
Was kind of just an idea to. So I had reason to do Scream Factory this week.
Our trivia game this week, though it will have happened by the time this gets released, is
Scream Factory theme.
The whole thing. So,
and they're hosting it.
And they're hosting.
Oh, great.
Or it's just cool. Jeff, right?
It's Jeff is coming and doing it. So, yeah.
5 years. Guys, 5 years. You think about how much that's influenced probably even our show and the popularity of the show.
We're supposed to have them on to talk about the 5 year at some point.
They will be on very soon.
Cool.
Yeah.
What else? Anybody else got?
That's it.
That's it. Oh, my God.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, guys.
Well, why don't we take a quick break and hear from our sponsor again, and then we will continue with our anthology.
I'd just like to remind everyone that this week our sponsor is The Raking. The Raking, available now on Amazon Prime, iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, Xbox, and cable on demand.
All right, so like it says here, the final requires us to go into the field and study a chosen myth or legend.
Oh, this one's in Joshua Tree. Locals dubbed it the Rake because of its extraordinary long fingers and nails like claws.
So peaceful here.
That's probably what all those people said too, right before they disappeared.
Did you hear something?
Probably just a rodent.
Okay, so we are ready to dive into our topic, which is building the perfect anthology, perfect horror anthology. And our co-host this week is Darren Scott, because he knows a thing or two about these. He's a writer, director, producer, and two of the films he was involved in, one was From a Whisper to a Scream, a.k.a. The Offspring, which Scream Factory did a great job releasing that.
They did. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And Daniel Griffith edited a wonderful documentary.
The documentary is incredible.
I mean, I love it.
It's longer than a movie.
Because I'd met you and Jeff Burr, the director, previously, but I didn't realize how far back your history goes. So it was fun seeing bits of your like college shorts together and, you know, like the work that you did back when you first met. But, you know, when you were on Killer POV with us, we talked quite a bit about another anthology you're the producer of, which is Tales from the Hood.
Mm. Yeah. And it's coming out on Blu-ray.
And we're very excited about that, because back then you were skeptical about the idea of it ever coming out on Blu-ray because we couldn't find a print.
They couldn't find a print.
So now Scream Factory, who always does a great job, they're putting this out on April 18th.
Yeah.
Blu-ray edition of this. So
new documentary.
So yeah, give us the scoop. What did they find a print of it? Where did they get an HD version?
You know what? They got an HD master from Universal. I still have not seen this HD master, and frankly, I don't know for sure whether it's going to be totally up to snuff. But I know one thing: it's going to be way better.
It's going to look a
than
lot
the
better
the old DVD was, and that I want a copy of it.
Yeah, exactly. Besides Mike Williamson's 16mm print.
Yeah, well, right. You know that exists.
It was like everyone would always loop him in on every conversation about where's the print. He's like, "Well, I've got my 16mm print."
So what did I know? I put them in touch with you because obviously, you know, I wanted you to be involved.
Yeah,
as
and
much
I
as
appreciate
possible.
It. And so, you know, we went down, Rusty and I did new interviews. They did interviews with a lot of the actors, Corbin Burnson, Wings Hauser, Paula J. Parker.
Wow.
A bunch of people. And
that's great.
How's Wings?
I guess I can't tell this story. Should I tell this story?
Oh, yes,
tell it.
I'm going to get in trouble for this story. We did a brand new commentary track.
Uh-oh.
It was me, Rusty, Wings Hauser, and Paula J. Parker.
Oh, hell yeah.
Watched the entire movie.
Oh, my God.
We started riffing. We didn't pay attention to the movie, just how we had come together, things. You know, I'm talking to Wings about Hollywood Vice Squad and all this kind of stuff. I'm the devil, baby, if you remember that. And it was the weekend that they had that mega storm that came through.
Mm-hmm.
So we shot it. We did it on Friday. Get home, the rain starts coming down.
Like half of L.A. had to shut down.
Yeah. I'm up in Santa Barbara, and they call us and they say, not blaming Scream Factory, but the place, which I will not name, which did it, went to mix it down. System crashed. They lost the entire commentary.
Oh my God.
Which was, you know, impossible to reproduce.
Yeah, well, especially when you've got people like Wings in there, that's just, you're getting wild off the cuff.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
But there will be a commentary track on it because we have the old one was done back then.
Oh,
and cool interviews, and it's going to be a good release.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. Now, honestly, the other thing is when we've done or talked about anthology in the past, this one comes up, I think a lot of people are going to discover it. It's like ripe for rediscovery right now, you know?
So definitely.
It's going to be really cool.
It's one I didn't see at the time.
You confirmed something for me, by the way, which I think it was you. It was either you or it might have been Terrence Kelsey.
What'd I do?
It was one of the two of you went and saw Get Out and recognized there was this little string of music that's just – it's – identical to a little string of music at the beginning of the titles of Tales from the Hood.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Terrence, he went on posting and saying, oh, it was a tribute. I don't know about that. Uh-huh. But I'll claim it.
Now we get to ask Jordan when he comes back.
I bet
on the
you
show.
He's seen it. So yeah, maybe
he seemed pretty well versed in horror.
Like, yeah.
And he seemed pretty smart with it. There's a lot of like weird references to the past.
Oh, yeah.
America's history and stuff. Yeah. Just things that are so specific that you were talking about, you know.
Well, I think a BuzzFeed article that was like, here's 22 things you may have missed from it. I don't know if all of them are accurate,
but
there was some really subtle stuff that I definitely wouldn't have picked up on.
I mean,
I think it's pretty brilliant
stuff. So,
yeah.
A lot of great think pieces cool. out there about it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. I can't wait for this thing to come out and see all the new features and stuff and just see it in HD, which is going to be great.
And if you want a full interview, like part of this is like we want you on as a co-host today.
Yeah.
And so, but we do have a great interview with you on the old show. We'll link to that.
Which is about like your whole history and your work coming up. So,
but you're such a film fan and you're like one of those cinephiles that, like they were saying, when we ran into each other back in the day,
right.
I'd have so much fun just bantering with you, whatever was on the wall that day.
I remember the time that, you know, when Jump Cut was going, I Facebook chatted him and said, we should have a series at the Jump Cut on pre-code Hollywood films. And blah, 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 blah. And he's like,
I was just like,
people
just
who come here
Joel.
Aren't going to come see this.
Darren, I would have been there with you.
Yeah, she would have been, actually.
So we I love pre-code.
Three-person party.
I love pre-code. Yeah. So the three of us could have been there, like, watching.
Babyface!
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
But yeah, definitely check that episode out, because we talk about a lot of fun stuff. But so for this one, Horror Anthologies, and I can't remember where this came up. It honestly stemmed from some conversation I saw on our group, a thread where I think you had brought up.
We brought it up briefly. Anthology.
You had said
just
the word like, "Oh, what's the perfect anthology?" Mm-hmm. I think it's when Ryan saw Creepshow 2 and we're like talking like, "Well, how you know?" And then the conversation stemmed to, "Well, what would be the perfect anthology?"
Yeah.
And this is actually, I remember I threw this assignment at you guys, and then it was much harder for me to do myself, which was basically I was like, "All right, well, let's pick our five favorite segments from anthologies." Pretend to put them together as if we're curating our own horror anthology. Mm-hmm. Wraparound is optional. If you want to throw one in there, that's fine. And create a perfect anthology. What would be our perfect anthology? And what's fun about this, I actually went and rewatched, there's like a little 12-minute mini documentary called We Come in Pieces that Ryan Spindel did when, you know, that all of us are in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And and what was fun about that is I think Elric points out, he's like, no matter what anthology it is, you get a group of horror fans in the room together, they're all gonna have a different favorite.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's the fun of it. And I think Brian Collins is the one, it's like, if horror fans love doing one thing, it's bitching.
Oh god, yeah.
Like, so they will relentlessly bitch about
which
what's the
like.
Better piece
and
what's
they will
the,
argue about it. Like there will always be an argument because somebody is gonna think that whatever one you think is the worst is the best.
Obviously.
Well,
yeah.
I remember that day we were talking about Creepshow 2.
It's horror. Yeah.
And it was the guy who made it, and we're all like, no one likes Chief Woodenhead. He's like, that's my favorite. We're like, oh, you're crazy.
Well, I think, you know what? What's funny, too, is I think anthology horror films are one of those, like, top three discussion points among horror films.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can always, even when I was running Shock Till You Drop, or you guys were doing Killer POV, and we were doing a Bloodcast, people would always ask, what's your favorite anthology horror film? What's your, you know, and it's a great talking point, because I think what it offers is just diversity. There's just an eclectic bunch of topics and ideas and stories that you could tell.
Well, and it's rare that there's not a good one. Like, even in quite, like, I would watch, say, Theater Bazaar, and there's going to be one really good short one really amazing moment in it. And I think that's, you know, in a day where sometimes you watch entire feature films where there's nothing for you, that's at least something, you know?
Yeah.
The thing we kind of miss is, like, the sole voice behind anthologies. That's certainly gone away, where it's usually now, like,
six
people
crammed.
Hey,
I know somebody who's doing one.
Who?
You don't plug your...
I can't plug anything yet. All I can say is I will say that having just...
Becca made an anthology,
I made an anthology film. We wrapped a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
And it's a sole voice. It's just me and Dave the whole time. And I will say that was kind of coming from like a background of knowing all of these horror anthologies. That was kind of the most fun part of it was like, you know, when we wrote it, we kind of just wrote down every idea that we had. And then we had to go back through and be like, well, no, we need to mix it up here. And, you know, when you're actually creating it, you do create it like a mixtape where it's like,
Tunnel shift.
Well, now we're going to take it down a notch. No, now we're going to pump it up. And so it's been fun. And even now that we're completing the post on some of them, rearranging them and things like that.
That must be the interesting part, from the writing to the re-edit, that it might change completely.
The
just
edits
like some of these
always change. And I mean, that's true of anything that happens. Shorts, feature films, as soon as you start editing it, you realize that like entire scenes are different than you thought they were going to be. And that's definitely been the case.
Yeah.
So, but I'm excited for the ones that we've crafted here today. And it made me realize that there's a lot of segments that, I was thinking about that I was like, I don't remember much of the film, which means doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that it didn't stick in my brain. But there's, one from most films that I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this movie. I remember that segment that made it so – I was remembering Qui-Gon.
I think that's normal.
Yeah, Qui-Gon. Mm-hmm. I remember the one Ho-Chi the Earless. And that's the one where the guy has the writing on his body. And I was like, dude, that segment was crazy.
Yeah, that's going to play at the New Beverly, I think, next week with another Japanese horror film. I think it's Onibaba, which is amazing.
Oh, my God. Cool we should film. Go.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen Qui-Gon since, I don't even remember it, but I've seen it a long time ago. Okay. Yeah, I think
Rob,
really
you and I will be somewhere else watching something.
I know. Yeah. I will totally go with you
You're
if you want to go to that.
Yeah, no, fine.
We're going to look up the dates.
I know. We will look up the dates.
So, so how are we going to rock? Are we just going to go one by one, knocking out the five?
Yeah, we'll go one by one and knock out the five. And if you want to talk about why, et cetera.
Discussions.
I found this really difficult. I mean, just the rules were it has to be a segment from a horror anthology film, but not a TV thing or anything. But, you can get away with the Twilight Zone movie. Those will count.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You can add a wraparound if you want. And really... did you guys order them? Because that's
the
thing that I picked.
Yes.
I picked five, and I'm like, I think this might be a terrible movie together.
Yeah, that's what I did as
sure.
well. I picked my five favorite, and then I was like, okay, this is so much. If I actually saw this movie, I would be like, you just threw everything in there, didn't you?
Yeah. Especially because some run long. If you picked a couple 30-minute ones, now your movie's already too long.
And
it's
all over the place.
Yeah,
so then I went back, and I made my, as if I was treating it like a mixtape, my kind of custom theme one. So I have both of those.
All go back and do that part later, after show and maybe post them, how you do it as a real movie
real
you'd
anthology?
Want to see.
Because
I agree with you. I don't think I'd want to see this movie.
This movie does.
But I'm excited about writing it down.
It's like the Shaggy and Scooby sandwich where they're throwing all of this amazing food on it, but you look at it together
sandwich.
And you're like, that's just too much sandwich for me, man.
Plus, these are so subjective, right? So he said the word best, make your best anthology. So what that really means is, what's the most you anthology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not
going to
be the best anthology. So that's where I doubled down on what do I love? And I think that's what happened with VHS. You think about it, they asked all these dudes to make a movie. What happens? They all end up being misogynists because every story was about misogyny.
Yeah.
Same thing probably filters in our choices. When you start to see patterns, you're like, oh shit, I guess I'm kind of obsessed by that one. So anyway.
So why don't we start with our co-host Darren, because you came in with 10 picks and you're because you couldn't whittle it down, but now you have.
It's been difficult to whittle it down and, when you ask these kind of questions, I can do the list now. If you ask me a week from now, I'll do another list.
Yes,
it'll probably
course.
Be mostly different. It's just
it's the same
way your
thing
brain works.
When
that's
people ask
are.
Me my five favorite horror films, it's going to be different the next day.
Yeah, it's going to be different the next time. But I did come up with nine, and I've whittled it down to five. So I will try to sneak the others in.
Five and a wraparound?
When you guys were talking.
Did you
five and a wraparound.
Good man.
All right,
man.
Here we go.
Five
and
a wraparound. So,
hit us
one,
with it.
I'm going to slightly break your rule, though I don't know if it's a breaking of the rule, by starting with number one, and this is not in no particular order, the Zuni Fetish Doll episode from Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a TV movie, but it was a TV
a
that counts.
Movie.
Definitely
yeah, because I
okay.
included some TV movies.
Yeah, it's great. It's
okay.
Great.
And that's
Karen Black.
Karen
pretty
Black.
Spectacular.
It's one of the
incredibly
funniest
things ever. Scariest thing ever. And of course, it inspired the little doll episode that we did in Tales from
the Crypt. Is that Dan Curtis
later.
Directed?
Dan Curtis directed.
Dan Curtis directed. I also really like, I didn't put it on my list, but just if you watch that trilogy, I also always really like the first story in that, the one about the photographer. She's taking photos and the guy's obsessed with the teacher and stuff. Because Karen Black's in all three stories.
Oh, that's right. She's
and
in
that's
all
what's
the
so amazing
one of my
about the film.
favorite quotes. You've poisoned me. No, dear. I've killed you.
Nice.
The doll segment is fantastic. And also I remember, his Child's Play and Chucky are probably the most famous killer dolls out there. I remember when they were I've spoken to Tom Holland, and he probably talks about it on the commentaries. He said when they were trying to break that script and figure out how they were going to do Child's Play and make it not cheesy, Trilogy of Terror was it. It was that segment was mostly the POV shots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's like, that really opened up the world. You can do a killer doll thing if you do it this way.
That's cool.
So it's a great.
Good
that's
choice.
A great one.
What else you got?
Next one is Blind Alleys from Tales from the Crypt. And that's the episode where the military man comes to take over the home for blind people.
Mistreats
them pretty brutally. And these are some inventive blind people, because they come up with the greatest way to torture and drive this guy crazy and the worst situation. I don't know if there's anybody out there who hasn't seen it yet, but and the end is just devastating when he's faced with killer dog on one side, narrow corridor of razor blades on the other, and the lights go out. You don't need any more
that's
than that.
That's maybe that was the Saw inspiration right there.
Saw, yeah, right there.
And that's Freddie Francis, right? Directed
that
one. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's great. All right, liking it so far.
Next would also be another one from Tales from the Crypt, which isn't really surprising because they had the whole series, EC Comics series,
to draw
from the first time. So, of course, they grabbed a lot of great ones. But this one is All Through the House, the Santa Claus episode. I love it.
Which is funny because I'd say that's the most famous of the HBO series as well, or at least when it first came out. Like, everyone knows that one. But there's something really creepy about that original one from the movie. I think it's because the Santa Claus just looks like a very normal Santa Claus, and there's something more unsettling. And
it's in the TV show.
It's Joan Collins. Yeah.
In the TV show, he looks fucked up from the beginning. He's terrifying.
I think it's actually pretty scary, and it's a great one to include. It's a great one to include because it's a short burst. It's really short compared to a lot of these.
Yeah.
And I saw it just only a couple months ago they did Black Christmas and Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Mike Williamson brought just that short.
Oh, a 16
from his 16 millimeter.
That's great.
And they just played in between, and it was like seeing it like that, I was like, oh my god, this is a fucking great short film.
Yeah
Like a really good segment.
It's fantastic. The next one would be total shift of tone.
Okay.
The Black Cat from Tales of Terror. And
the Corman,
if people don't don't remember, this is the episode which is a mixture of a couple of Poe films in which Vincent Price it's Peter Lorre. Which one murdered? God, I'm getting mixed up. But
a lot of murder.
The thing that's so great about this episode is the wine tasting contest, which is, to me, one of the funniest scenes ever in a horror anthology or in a movie period. Mm-hmm. Peter Lorre, Vincent Price, battling it out to see, drinking each other under the table and be the king wine expert, and every time Peter Lorre says, it's Vincent Price, let me see, swish, 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 little air, ooh, yes, fruity, a taste of roses, a bit tart for Margot, and Peter Lorre is just blasted out of his brains before the thing even starts. So he just keeps swigging and going.
You're missing a lot of the good physical here.
Yeah. This is very physical.
1942. It's very good. And it just goes on. It's a great episode. So
all those great horror actors are also just really funny. Jeff Combs and people like that who are great horror actors, but they're also really funny people.
They're really fun.
In the right role,
The next one would be The Drop of Water from Black Sabbath. Mario Bava's Black Sabbath.
That woman will haunt my brain forever.
Creepiest old woman lying in a bed ever. And it still scares me. If I put it on, it still creeps me out.
Yeah,
and,
if you ask me the best segment of any anthology, that'd be my pick right now.
Wow,
it's on my list. I find it so unnerving,
but it was on my list.
Okay,
because people forget it's not just like a creepy old lady; it's like you're taking a ring off the dead, stealing from a dead woman, and then it just the green lighting of that film. It's like
I'm gonna say it wrong, but the other one from Black Sabbath, the Wurlidock.
Yeah, the one with Boris Karloff.
Vertilock. That one was always crazy too.
Well, that one's super creepy because when he's trying to get in and he's at the window. And it's like, there's me, Grandpa. Yeah. And you're just like, it's super spooky. It's like that scene in The Others when everybody's outside, when the servants are outside
that
the window.
Yeah, the Vertilock is.
Vertilock is scary too. So that's a really good one.
Yeah.
So that's my five. And my wraparound would be the wraparound from Asylum.
Oh, nice.
Dude, me and you are I might as well not even write a list. My fucking wraparound's Asylum. And I actually was going to – there was like two segments I was almost going to pick from Asylum. It's such a good anthology. If there's
good.
One film that we could recommend to them, I'm not even kidding. Asylum was a total – I couldn't believe it. It was another it's Mike awesome. Williamson screening where I just couldn't believe I hadn't seen it because with the Cushing, Lee, and anything like that, you think you've seen it all. And then suddenly Asylum and this Amicus film came on and I was like – oh my God, it's one of the best wraparounds to actually have a story and a reason for existing.
And that is
the punchline
like,
of the movie. The basic is a guy interviewing for a new doctor interviewing for a job because the previous guy, do they tell him he's gone insane?
They tell him he's gone insane and he has to determine which of these which of the patients. Was the guy, doctor.
And by going into each one of their stories, that is your segment. And they're all totally different. They have nothing to do with mental asylums except the last one.
Right.
And the last one has Herbert Lallman crazy miniature toys that they're putting the souls into. Yeah. It is fucking bonkers. But the one, if I was going to include a segment, I didn't, but it's the first one where it's basically a man, a husband kills his wife, and she's cut into all these pieces and wrapped in this like butcher brown paper, and each piece starts to come back together to kill the mistress, and it is fucking scary.
The
like
breathing of the head,
breathing of the head,
the paper, sucking in.
It's
and
a hell
out.
Of a
it's
film.
Really scary.
There's nothing like cheap about this anthology. It's like it's classic. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's got Rob written all over it because it's written by Rob Block.
Oh, okay.
It's written by the writer.
I've
Psycho.
Actually never seen this one.
You're right. Yeah, I don't think I've seen this. And it's one of these
it's
like
amazing.
Amicus and
Roy Ward
they
Baker.
Had so
Roy,
many yeah. out.
It's
I swear
wonderful.
I'd seen them.
You should see it.
Yes, I'm writing down the ones.
I love that. I love that we have two of the same films and the same wraparound. That is uncanny. All right.
It doesn't really surprise me.
No, not really.
Elric, do you want to go next?
I should because we're going to save some time here.
All right.
And I'm pretty sure me and Becca will have one crossover. Okay, so I the biggest surprise, and it's not necessarily one of my favorites, but at the top, and mine are kind of, I put it in an order of five just because that makes sense. Number one I went with from Necronomicon, the first story in it by Christopher Gans, The Drowned.
Man, if I had put money down on Elric picking a
Necronomicon.
You had a choice from Necronomicon. No. I just knew going through my selections. There would be one that represented.
This one was like at the last minute. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put one in because it's actually one of the better Lovecraft. It's easily the best squid thing Lovecraft. You know how people always make something like a squid thing? And I got to a point with that Lovecraftian image where I'm like just not interested in it. But the way the eyes glow in this, basically a man kind of comes back from Europe. He'd lost his family. He moves into this old house that he's inherited. And he kind of somebody hands him the Necronomicon and he wishes for his family to return. And his wife and daughter do come back. But now they're like these weird creatures kind of from the sea and these glowing eyes and the effects are fucking great. It's the guy who directed Brotherhood of the Wolf and Silent Hill.
And didn't Matt George Gans. Do the effects?
I don't. I would have assumed he did. I know he probably did the last
did
one,
the
which
last
is Yuzna's,
one, I know,
which
yeah.
I also think is bonkers fun. But this is just such a faithful, interesting. It was the story was Rats in the Wall by Lovecraft. Really fun movie. It's on the longer side. It's also the first one in that anthology besides the wraparound. So that one's kind of on the longer side. But I think if you haven't seen it, if you can track it down, it's really fun. That again, a film deserving Scream Factory, or somebody should be putting this out on Blu-ray. Then I hit with, as Darren was saying, All Through the House, Freddie Francis, Tales from Crypt, Joan Collins versus Killer Santa. You don't need to know anything more than that. It is super light, entertaining, fun. Then probably the one I'm going to guess that me and Becca have in common, and probably the main reason I'm thankful that I met Becca in my life, because it's my favorite thing she's ever recommended me. It was Bobby. From Dead of Night, Dan Curtis. I think it's next to Drop Water. It might be my second favorite segment I've ever seen. And this, I wasn't expecting that because I think I watched it on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
Because you had talked about it years ago, and I love this short. And this is one that again, another film that the other films on the anthology are quite weak, and that might be why it hasn't had a good release.
I mean, well, they're not even I guess I'll call them vague horror. Like the first one is about a time traveling car, and the second one is like this really long dramatic vampire thing that is not scary. It's seriously just kind of like Victorian vampires, like fumbling, very British. And then there's fucking Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby almost feels like
shit.
Like if I could describe it, I'd describe it like this. I think Ty West, if he adapted that into a feature, it'd be the ultimate Ty West movie. Like I think he could make
that's
a perfect movie out of that.
Yeah.
Because it's House of the Devil, but with a real great payoff.
With the amazing
like the thing
payoff.
That Ty is almost missing at the end of his movies. This is basically it's it's this middle class woman in the on a seaside house. And just looks so suburban, and she's lost her son, and she goes, and you just don't expect that she's suddenly going to draw a massive pentagram on the floor of her house and basically try to bring her son back. And you go through all this emotion. It's a 30-minute one, so it's on the long side. side. I'm definitely not going to ruin the ending, but a lot of horror fans know. When you see it, your jaw drops and you go, this is actually a frightening short film.
Yeah, it's great.
Scary.
Even the buildup to that moment is still totally worthwhile. And it's a Richard Matheson story.
Yep. Directed by Dan O'Bannon?
No, it's Dan Curtis. Dan Curtis did all of them,
Thank you.
But it was really great. And I do thank you a lot for that one, because that's the one I just love.
Which I came across that one. I told this on the old Killer Bee. Yeah. Killer POV show, but I found that one by accident because I had gone to Eddie Brandt's looking for 1945's Dead of Night.
Right, the other one,
And which is also amazing. The ventriloquist dummy is brilliant on there.
The best,
Oh, he crossed it off.
One of Darren's follow-ups.
That was one of Darren's cast.
When we talk about, that's one where almost all the stories are great. It's like a very classic.
It's very classy. Yeah. It's very, that one definitely, it feels like, you know, it was made in this kind of time of restriction, but it still manages to be scary. Oh, but I had gone to Eddie Brandt's, which is our North Hollywood video store, looking for Dead of Night from 1945. And instead, the guy walked out and he was like, I got a Dead of Night anthology here from 1977. And I was like, well, that's not what I'm looking for, but I've never seen that, so I'll take it. And I did.
I think on Thursday, we're going to ask Jeff Nelson if there's any chance that one could get a screen fit, because that's a good one to ask about.
Yeah,
unless it's a rights thing. Anyway, that's a great one. Then I'd and by the way, when she's talking about Eddie Brandt's, for anyone listening who's not in L.A., you can watch Beyond the Gates, and that's Eddie Brandt's. That's what she's talking about. The video store.
The video store.
That movie features.
That is still open, and we go
there. Still open, next is going to be of no surprise to anyone who's ever heard me talk about horror and my origins, because I could never leave The Crate from Creepshow off a list, because it's the reason I'm sitting here.
Interesting.
It scared the living piss out of me, and I'll always love it for that reason. Fluffy forever. Yeah. And I know it's the longer one, and I know
I was going to say, that is the longer one.
But I also love Hal Holbrook, and I love the story of the professors, and there's just something about that world and how absolutely brutal his wife
is. Bobby.
Oh, she's just – it's painful. And she's usually so lovely in movies, but in this movie, brutal. And then I move into Drop of Water, which is kind of like my ending spot with Bava. You know, it's just – it's besides the fact that it's really scary, it's something we've talked about a few times, is that the idea of the uncanny when you look at something. And because they use a face that's clearly like not – real.
Yeah.
And so you have this uncanny
thing,
which makes it scary, but it's not terrifying until the end, where the body is clearly a person, but they've still put that thing on it.
Yeah.
And it's like floating towards you, and you're like, fuck, man. If I watched that alone in the dark, I probably would be like petrified. And it just holds up. But artistically, it also feels like lighting setup and stuff. It's like kind of the birth of like Argento's aesthetic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are being color wise.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Started
Bava
in the
was
palette.
A master of color.
Master
that's
of
one of his most
And then you look at Inferno, and you're like, oh, there's a direct link between this and Inferno.
No doubt.
And then at the end, I just wrote the Robert Bloch Amicus for this the Asylum wraparound. And the first story is called Frozen Fear. Great. And, you know, there's a lot of modern shorts that I wish, you know, if I was doing more, there's so many. I didn't put any of the things like the Safe Havens, the Amateur Nights, all those things. But it's hard when you're putting five.
Yeah.
There's so many great modern ones. But you're like, you know what? Yeah. I love these classics.
We got 90 minutes to 120 minutes. That's it. That's our time frame here.
I like it.
Make
I like
the perfect anthology.
So that's me and you out of the way.
We're one over.
Our film's almost the same movie. So good movie.
Nice. It is a good movie.
Why don't we keep going around the table? Becca, why don't you go? Because I feel like you'll have totally different choices.
I do. And I will say there were two
What are you laughing at, Ryan?
It's true, no.
No, it's true. That, I will.
I absolutely love it, because I'm always like, Elric, I can get a sense of the choices.
By now,
I know what they're going to be. Becca is a fucking wild card.
I love that.
No idea.
I'm the wild card.
No idea.
And I will say, I did
drop
my
some deep cuts.
I did my curated list, which I will do after this one, where I went through and actually made a mixtape. Bobby's on that one.
Okay.
It is not on this one.
I respect that.
And there are two that I couldn't. I had questions about. So my first one, my favorite segment of an anthology film ever is the misbehaviors from Four Rooms.
Which I love. I do love that.
But I was it's not really horror. I can't put it
in
anywhere.
It's chaos.
You can get away with it because it's kind of horror comedy and there's a corpse in
it. I didn't put it in, but I just had to give it
Who directed that one? Avery? Or?
No, that was
Rodriguez.
Rodriguez.
So I just had to give it a shout out because I was like, it's balls out nuts. I love that one, but it's just, it wasn't horror enough for what I was doing.
It's my favorite projectile vomiting gag ever. The second that Tim Roth starts vomiting, I laugh every time.
So, and then I also have to give a shout out for this movie called Strange Frequency, which I absolutely love. And I think I talked about on Killer POV. Strange Frequency was a TV show that ran on VH1 for about maybe 10, 12 episodes. And they were 30-minute segments, not even 30 minutes. They were 20. And each one was a horror story, but they had to involve rock and roll somehow. So they were very rock and roll themed. They only ran it once on VH1. It ended after like one season, and then they released them on DVD as anthology films. So each one of they did three of them, although the third one never came out, so four of the episodes are still in limbo. But they did Strange Frequency 1 and Strange Frequency 2. I didn't include any of the segments because they weren't actually created as an anthology film, but I highly recommend checking them out just because there's so much good stuff in there.
We call that a deep cut detour.
Deep cut detour.
Okay. Deep cut detour.
Now, on to mine. So mine actually, you know, I've got maybe 2D cuts. Not that crazy. So my first one, Southbound, the surgery sequence.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. That is amazing.
Sure. Because I didn't know what it was called, and I looked it up and wasn't too sure. So I'm just calling it the surgery sequence.
Just call it the Bruckner.
I will say that this kind of pointed something out to me, that all of mine are all about building dread. It's all about, like, you know what's happening, and it gets more dread and ups the ante as it goes along. So then the second one, and this is kind of my love of aquatic monsters, The Raft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
The Raft is good.
Again, it's all about dread and the tension created. And I will say that the Blu-ray is not as kind to the Raft
the garbage
monster.
Bag?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I agree and disagree. And there's some points that when it's an overhead shot and there's kind of like this oil slick like
Then it looks
surface,
lovely.
Yeah.
There are some other times that I'm just kind of like, it looked a little bit nicer in my VHS tape.
The work on the victims is great.
Yeah, that was gorgeous.
The melting
is awesome.
That's great. I really love that.
Quitters Inc. from Cat's Eye.
So good.
Oh, that's a cool
one. Which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
So good. Safe Haven from VHS, too.
Yeah, that was very near miss. Of all the modern ones, I think that's the best modern. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, that and Bruckner's an amateur.
I figured you guys would have more modern ones, so I stuck to my Asylum.
No, I like it.
then this one is quite possibly one of my favorite segments ever, Cut, which is Chan-Wook Park's from Three Extremes. About the guy who sneaks into the director's house and like the marionette puppet and everything.
Really freaky.
In Three Extremes, everyone always points to Dumplings just because it's kind of the most shocking and like, oh, I can't believe I
Chan-Wook
went there.
Parks is my favorite.
And that got adapted to a feature, I think, Dumplings.
Yeah, Dumplings did. But man, Cut, that stuck with me. And I really, there's a couple of Japanese horror anthologies. There's one called Horror Story that, and I think they made a part two of it as well, that is just dynamite. Hmm. And then for my wraparound segment, this one is a deep cut because the segments in it aren't very good.
It's a deep cut wraparound?
So this is called After Midnight. It's an anthology film from 1989. And the actual segments in it are not so good.
Is the poster like a girl burning in like a clock?
Yes.
I tried to watch that.
Oh, the wraparound is really good. The wraparound is about a professor, first day of school or college. Oh. It's a psychology class, and they're studying they're studying fear. And so he is trying to find ways to evoke fear in the class. And things start developing, like he's telling the stories, and that's kind of the wraparound thing. But then things start developing that you wonder if it's part of the lesson and if he's doing those intentionally or if things are actually like getting really fucked up in the classroom. Mm. And I loved that setup. The payoff is not as good as it could be, but I still think that that was just a really cool way to kind of usher into the stories. And then the stories sucked, and I wasn't there with it. But I liked the wraparound for After Midnight.
Wow. All right, Ryan, you want to go next?
Sure.
Now let's do it.
Well, I started
save the best
with,
for last.
In no particular order, this is mostly like just short stories that affected me when I was a kid or just like had a deeper impact, upon revisit. Asylum, Frozen Fear, which is the one about the body being chopped up and being wrapped up. Just the effect itself, because I think that was the first story in the Asylum anthology.
It's the very first one.
And it just made me stand up at attention. I was just like, whoa, I am sitting on the edge of my seat right now watching these body parts move. And I thought it was a great it was a great effect that I actually believe kind of impacted some of the special effects in 13 Ghosts, the remake, because there's one called the torso and it's all wrapped in plastic and it just moves along. And I was holy shit, that's Asylum.
That's in Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah. But Frozen Fear is just a really, really great kickoff to any anthology. Yeah, and that's a good finale choice. Is fantastic. Twilight Zone, the movie, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Mm-hmm. Love
that. You can't beat it. It's
George Miller.
It's definitely the most. Twilight Zone, the movie, had a real effect on me as a kid. I saw it at the drive-in. I thought it was really fantastic. But there's so many great stories. And when I was sitting there racking my brain over which one to pick from it, I was going to go with the kid in the house with Kathleen Quinlan.
Yeah, sure.
That was great. But Nightmare on 20,000 Feet just goes, it just sends the movie out with a bang, you know?
Well, I mean, even the little tiny Aykroyd and thingy, that probably scared me the more in one instant than anything growing up.
Terrifying.
Like where I just jump back with like, oh my God.
I used to pause it right beforehand and then like go hide behind the couch and then unpause, let it go past and then
the
come back out.
The monster's brilliant. Yeah. Like that's a brilliant look. In fact, I would like to see that monster in a movie because look at it. What is it? Like some weird old blue thing?
Weird,
it's like,
ghoulish thing.
That, what a great setup. And
the sound effect is also like, it sounds like a panther.
It's like a weird werewolf hybrid thing.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
But I also love the gremlin from Nightmare on 20,000 Feet. I think the creature design, this weird porcupine-y kind of looking thing.
He's kind of like heavy metal. Like he reminds me of something from heavy metal.
That's the George Miller.
George Miller did that one.
And what I love, I think it's been pointed out, but George Miller, he does it, the eye, the bulging eyes. He always puts in that one subliminal shot of bulging eyes. It's in Mad Max right before the car hits him. Yeah. And then in that Twilight, in the Twilight Zone, John Lithgow, bulging eyes for one shot.
Yep.
But it's so great because all the build up to it, you know, he's got this this little girl, this nosy little girl next to him with the doll, you know, no smoking. It's great. Then my next one is Trilogy of Terror, Amelia, which is the Zuni doll.
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
This thing is insane. What a great performance by Karen Black. The doll itself. I mean, what's great about it is just the sense of raising the stakes and raising the escalation, you know, the escalation of it all, because he's like, oh, I closed the door. Oh, nope. He's sticking his knife underneath the door and like cutting my feet. Oh, no, he's hanging on the doorknob. Oh, he's coming up this way. There was just no escaping him.
He's a determined little sucker.
Yeah. He is. Yeah. And then the ending is a whopper.
Oh,
yeah. Oh my God.
It's so creepy. You don't want to be the guy coming through that door.
It's one of those, like, almost like that final shot almost doesn't make sense, but it's so haunting.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's
it works.
Scary.
Oh,
so great.
It's so scary.
But also, like, the relationship that they said at the very beginning, because she's talking to her mother, right? She's like on the phone with her mother, and you can tell there's like tension there, and then it all comes back around at the end.
Well, I think I always thought that it was like, because they keep cutting to scenes of like a baby carriage or like it's like a crib. For some reason, I always thought that there were like these tones of like motherhood in Amelia. Like it could be like a little baby, and then it's the Zuni warrior.
Maybe,
I haven't seen it in a while, so I could be misremembering it. But I always remember like tones of motherhood.
Huh.
And then
you're
probably
thinking of the kid of Chucky or something.
Probably.
Chucky part four or something.
Seed.
That's from Seed. I don't think I've even made it to Seed yet.
The follow-up to that is Cat's Eye, The Ledge.
That's my favorite of that, too.
I recently revisited Cat's Eye and still found my palms getting sweaty just because of like the sheer effect of him climbing around on this ledge, you know, on a high rise. It works so well. I mean, you can look at it now and you go, oh, look at the little model cars. But I mean, from the pigeon to the water hose to all these elements –
that
it's
just,
it's harrowing.
It was after that.
I'm afraid of heights. So.
Yeah, me too.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
So Ryan, was that your follow-up?
Huh?
Was that a runner-up, the ledge?
No,
or was
five.
That your fifth?
No, that was his fifth.
Oh, okay.
No. Asylum, Twilight Zone, Trilogy of Terror, Cat's Eye.
Oh, okay.
That's four.
Four.
Five, my fifth is Tales from the Dark Side, Lover's Vow.
The Gargoyle,
That was not on my runner-up list.
Yeah, Lover's Vow, James Remar falling in love with Ray Dong Chong, who turns out to be a gargoyle. It's just like...
I feel
now. Yeah.
You shame me. I feel bad leaving it off. I feel like she's going
to
get me now for leaving it off my list.
Yeah. It's so emotional. It works so well.
Yeah.
And you really buy their relationship. And when they start having kids, you're like, oh, great. But you know he's got this secret. And you're like, don't do it, dude. Just like a fucking man to blow it.
Well, we talked about it on the old show as kids watching that. Like when I was young watching that, never saw it coming in a million years. So it was the most mind-blowing twist I'd ever seen at
Absolutely.
The time.
And what was great is they sold it because the effects are so good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the creature design is so good. And I don't have a wraparound segment, but I do have kind of like a three-minute like little snack. Mm-hmm. And that's from ABC's of Death, L is for Libido. By Timo Tahanto or whatever his last
actor. Oh, yeah, that one's fucking extreme.
Who also did Safe Haven with Gareth. Mm-hmm. L is for Libido is about these two guys that are strapped to chairs and there's an audience all around them and they roll out like this really beautiful woman and then they force them to jerk off.
Oh,
and if you don't get off, then a spike gets rammed up through
but
your ass.
But they end up bringing
head.
Like cancer patients.
But then they start bringing in, yeah, they start bringing in like these terrible things. The first day, and then the next thing they roll out like a little kid and it's like, oh God, no, that's awful.
Yeah. No, it's
then
really
they bring
crazy.
Out someone who's dying on a bed, deathbed.
It's
and
unreal.
It just keeps it just going and going.
But it is really well made. And
it's
if you can stand
really,
it's
yeah,
really good.
It's wow. really well done. And I just remember, I've never felt more like cringy in a theater.
Wow.
So anyways.
That's insane.
That's a good choice.
Alrighty, well, here's my five and wrap around. And most of these have already been mentioned, but I put them in order. Mm-hmm. And again, this is obviously such a tough thing. And it's weird because mostly my sensibilities tend to be kind of on the horror comedy tip. Mm-hmm. And yet none of these really are that. I mean, one kind of falls in fun kind of category. My first one is The Drop of Water from Black Sabbath, which is ironic because I just bought the Kino Lorber Blu-ray of it. And it is the first segment on that Blu-ray.
So the AIP American version.
I hate that. The version I like is when it's the last one.
Well, so what I heard is because I on the same show that brought this all up, where I kind of dissed the phone one, because I was like, yeah, that one's kind of light, and it kind of ruins that anthology. One of our British listeners wrote, go, no, that is a totally different movie in the European version. It's all about lesbianism.
Yeah.
It's like really dark. AIP got the rights. They said, we're going to – oh, I think they already had the rights as it was shooting. They said, no, we're going to take it. We're going to put that story first. We're going to put the Karloff one last. We're going to put the other one in the middle. We're going to make it just a voyeur stalker movie instead. Totally changed. Apparently, the context, it's like a totally different movie, the second one. The one on the phone is a totally different movie, and the order
it's second
totally
in that version. Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay.
And so unfortunately, I haven't seen the European version as far as I know.
Well, that's the one I remember is the European version that had the where Drop of Water is the last one, because quite frankly, you can't top that really.
No, it's all downhill.
Which is why when it's the first segment, I believe,
it's really scary.
I looked into it, I believe Arrow UK has put out a Blu-ray. It's a Region B, so more reason to get a multi.
Yeah,
I believe their version has both cuts on it. I believe. Because I was so disappointed when I got the Kino Lorber one, and they usually do a great job. When I started it and it was the first segment, I was like, no, not this version.
Yeah, it throws your timing off. Yeah.
You know, but for my anthology, I'm totally going to open with that.
With that contradiction stated.
My contradiction. Yeah. So I just want to start out with that because I think that's kind of a fun, scary way to kick it off. Uh-huh. And then my second segment would be The Raft from Creepshow 2.
Nice.
Because then I want to go fun.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I mean, there's so many great things from Creepshow. Like, I almost went for the Leslie Nielsen skit, which is great.
Yeah.
But just there's something about The Raft that's just like, that's just fun. And then the third midpoint, which nobody picked, from Trick or Treat, The School Bus Massacre.
Mm. It's on my supplementary list.
Supplement.
Yes.
And I'm talking about the moment where they go and tell the backstory and then the bit after where the kids, that whole segment about the school bus massacre. I just think it's a brilliant little short, and it works beautifully in the context of Trick or Treat, but in terms of my anthology, I feel like it'd be fun to go to this kid segment.
I like that one. I kind of lump that in with The Crate, where it feels like it's one of the longer ones of Trick or Treat, so it kind of bogs the momentum down a little bit.
Yeah,
I had the Werewolf Women one as a seventh
reveal.
Segment.
Right.
You know, my props to Doherty about this is I don't even think of it as an anthology film because it works so well as a movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I really never in my brain even think, oh, it's an anthology. I just think of it as this movie.
A giant movie,
which really is blended. Really rare.
It's well blended. You
know? Yeah. So that would have been my third. Number four, I antagonized over, and I ended up just going, and All Through the House from Tales from the Crypt.
Nice.
And then final to close it out is Bobby from The Dead of Night, 1977. Yes. And again, same thing. I haven't seen the whole movie. I remember how highly Becca spoke of it on Killer POV. I found it on YouTube. It was the only way to watch it because I think I looked for a DVD or whatever.
Or maybe you had a DVD.
I did, but it's rare that I would tell people to not watch the whole movie, but seriously,
it was one.
Just go to Bobby.
It was one that you said, and honestly, you could find Bobby on YouTube. And that's the thing. Even – you know, in this poorly pixelated YouTube version of this one short, it's so freaking scary, and it's the perfect way to end a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I think that's my final pick. And then in terms of a wraparound, this has always been one of my favorite wraparound. A lot of it has to do with the way I saw this in theaters. But it'd be the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie wraparound with the little, not Joey Lawrence, his little brother, and Deborah Harry.
And Blondie, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Deborah Harry captures this kid, and she keeps threatening to pretty much cook him, and he keeps buying his time by offering to read her another story.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was a brilliant little thing. And, you know, I think I told the story in Killer Preview. When I went to see that in theaters, I was underage, and me and my friend John, like, we used to do this all the time. We'd wait for an adult to show up and be like, hey, can you just pretend you're our guardian? We won't sit near you or anything. Don't worry about it. But I remember Tales from the Dark Side, this cool dad showed up with his two kids. And we're like, hey, man, can you get us in? He's like, sure, boys, come on. And so we sat next to him and his kids. And literally at the end of every skit, he would turn to us and just go, twist. And he did it. I will never forget it. He always turned to us and he's like, boys, the twist.
Yeah.
and he did it at the final thing, because what was so cool about that wraparound is it technically ends as its own story. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the wraparound, but then you get this like fun where she's like, your time's up, time to, you know, wrap, you know, time to put you in the oven.
Right.
And he's like, no, but there's one story I didn't tell you. Yeah. And he pretty much enacts what he's saying. And that's how he kind of defeats her and stuff. And it's just like, don't you love a happy ending?
Yeah. How did no one talk about Steve Buscemi versus mummies?
That is pretty good.
That is also
pretty cool.
With Julian Moore and Christian Slater.
Christian Slater versus
there's so
mummy.
Much, yeah, there's so yeah. much crazy stuff.
And it's one of my favorite mummies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like,
that mummy is
I said
good.
In the beginning, I don't like mummy movies or I don't like the mummy as a character, but that mummy and the Monster Squad mummy are my favorite.
No one disses Brandon Fraser's mummy.
No.
No one.
Wow. Well,
take back Turek.
Yeah. Anyways.
Well, I have my curated list because I noticed that there was one thing when I was like making my big giant list. I told you guys I made a big giant list and then I was like whittling it down. And I realized that I had one grouping of segments on here that all had a theme. And then I was like, do I really like that subgenre? Which is evil kids.
Yeah.
And then I was suddenly like, a lot of my favorite segments are evil kids. And on this is my curated like mixtape of evil kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the Trick or Treat school bus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great.
I have Sweet Tooth from Tales of Halloween.
Great. Nice.
Definitely one of my favorite authors. Yeah.
Tell your thing. You said that if Holidays.
Yeah, did we talk about that? I mean, well, because
I think we said it on air once.
Because when we watched that Holidays movie, there was like they basically blew the best Holidays. Mm-hmm. Halloween is basically the worst short I've ever seen. Kevin
yes.
Smith.
It's, yeah.
And the Christmas
Fact.
One, I just didn't like. No, I mean, it's not terrible. I just didn't like it personally.
There wasn't much to
but
it.
But there's some other ones that are really good in there. And, mm-hmm. and we just started talking about how you could pull from other anthologies. You take Sweet Tooth, put it in for the Halloween.
Yep.
You take All Through the Night and put it as the Christmas one. Pure Gold. Or we were actually talking about taking Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
Trimmed down.
It's short.
Trimmed down.
Then Holidays would be perfect.
And then you've got this perfect anthology. So can we make that happen?
Yeah.
You know, Holiday. Oh, go ahead.
So I've got the Trick or Treat school bus. I've got Sweet Tooth. I have Bobby from Dead of Night.
Yeah.
And then from one of Darren's films, I have from A Whisper to a Scream, the Civil War segment. Always, it's this soldier who shows up at this house with all these kids, and he thinks that he's there protecting them, and it gets really fucked up. And I love that segment.
Actually, you know what we're all forgetting when we're talking about wraparounds? That's actually one of the best earned wraparounds. Tales from Hood, where it ends up going, where it's taking these people.
Yeah.
On the
oh
final
my
line.
Gosh! Yeah,
like, I totally forgot that as
I
a wraparound.
I didn't see
That's
that coming
dynamite.
As a wraparound. The ending of the Tales from the Hood wraparound. I didn't see that coming.
What's that key line? You want to give that right to Mike? What he says?
The final line.
Yeah,
well, key line.
The key line.
Well, there's two really. Anything that has shit in it, it's a key line.
Oh, I think there's another one.
But the favorite, our favorite, is "Welcome to Hell." Motherfuckers.
That's the one.
When somebody asks you the key line, that's always the key line.
Yeah. Right.
Just for
that is reason enough
that
have to worry.
To buy Tales from the Hood.
I love it. Well, that was fun. That was a fun thing to do.
I know. Did anyone have any that almost that you struggle with that almost made your lists? But
well, him putting the gargoyle one day.
That's that was a good one.
Father's Day from Holidays.
Yeah, Father's Day from Holidays.
That is a great one.
Jocelyn Donahue one.
That's on my list of Safe Haven and stuff.
I mentioned Ho Chi the Earless from Qui-Gon. That was definitely one for me.
Bruckner's Amateur Night.
Amateur Night's good.
It's just like there's one from all these new films. Almost every new anthology, there's one film that's almost deserving, I think.
Yeah. Darren, what were some of your follow-ups that you ended up losing from your five? I just want to be curious.
I always liked Sweets. I always liked Sweets for the Sweet from House of Drip Blood. Because you have the daughter who's using voodoo on her mean father.
Yeah.
And it's just creepy.
Okay.
So that's one that I like. I pretty much stayed away from 80s on. Mm-hmm. You guys have named many that would be on my list, but then I was worried. I underestimated you guys, as usual. I was worried that it was all going to be 80s stuff, so I said, well, I'm going to stick to my Amicus and before because
you tried to
those
pull
my favorite
and go for
stuff.
All deep cuts.
You just see us as millennials. We look like four millennials to you, and I understand.
we're young looking guys. We're young. It's we're fun. Hip. Yeah. We've got it going on, guys.
But you guys have named some from the 80s. I definitely love the Crate.
Yeah.
That's a great episode.
Actually, that's a good challenge. I think online what I'll do is we'll do the craft, what she did, but with post like 2000, like anything.
Modern.
Because there are some really good ones.
Yeah, that would be an interesting challenge.
Like, you know, the VHS, every one of those VHS films had an excellent film in there. Mm-hmm. I think excellent.
Well, I was going to say, I think the next challenge should be pulling a short story from one of the anthology TV shows.
That would be great. Yeah.
Amazing stories and everything.
There's
so many other random stuff like Quicksilver Highway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's
monsters
like
I used to watch all the time.
Although,
since we've come around to this, I'll ask a question. A TV episode from an anthology show that fucked you up when you were a kid.
I know this one immediately because I thought about it for days. So there was this Amazing Stories episode about this guy. And whatever he drew came real. And they did this
The
in
World
a
War II one.
The World War II. And they did this in a Tales from the Crypt one with the Harry, the guy from Night Court.
Yeah,
and he drew his
Anderson.
Wife.
He was the
like,
Tales from the Crypt artist.
Then like his monster wife showed up.
He draws the wheel?
Yeah. And so in this Amazing Story episode that I thought about for days, he is a World War II pilot and they're trying to land the plane. And it won't land and the landing gear won't come down. And so he starts drawing wheels. And then the wheels appear. And that one, I was just like, oh, this is heavy. I thought about that one for days.
It's a toss-up. It's an Amazing Stories episode about a couple who live on a farm and they like throw stuff into a well. And then they pull the bucket back up and there's like riches. There's like gold and stuff like that. Mm. And that one ends with, I think, the abusive husband. She takes him and throws him down the well as the sacrifice. Mm. And then what she comes back with, she pulls up because it's set around Thanksgiving, is like his body, but it's been dressed up with all sorts of riches, but it's been staked into his body. Mm. So when you see the silhouette of him against the sun, he looks like a Thanksgiving turkey. Hmm. That was a really oddball one. It was just the final shot that haunted me. But Grandma from Twilight Zone, which was based on a Stephen King story, and it was just about a boy left alone with his grandmother, his like sickly grandmother in a room, and she's like this wheezing creature, but she was also a witch.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a Lovecraftian term
to it.
Creepy,
which Twilight Zone is that from?
The 80s.
The 80s one?
Messed me up big time. That was terrifying.
I don't know what messed me up. It would obviously be a Twilight Zone, but I guess, you know, because I'm really sensitive, so I get like depressed about stuff. I remember the Twilight Zone with Burgess Meredith, where he's the bookworm and all he wants
great.
Is time to read.
Oh,
yeah. And just
time
enough
at last.
And I just remember being so horribly sad that he steps on his glasses and can't read anymore. Like, I remember like just affecting me so deeply as a kid. So that's the screwed up one. But my all time favorite TV episode, I have to thank Elric Kane for because it is absolutely my sensibility.
Oh, I know. Okay, is
Mummy Dearest? Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
it's the Amazing Stories episode where they're directing a mummy movie. It's like it's Bronson Pinchot directing as pretending to be Steven Spielberg directing the mummy episode, and then the mummy's wife goes into labor, so it's him trying to get.
He hasn't got time to take the mummy out.
And so then there's like all the people, the townspeople are after a real mummy.
Yeah, it becomes a monster movie.
Great.
Oh,
it
sounds epic.
30 minutes. It is the most thoroughly entertaining, and I'm so sad because it used to be on Netflix and now it's not on there anymore.
Yeah, exactly. When we were recommending,
but I would buy that just as its own little short. It's amazing.
I got to look up who directed it because it was so tonally well
so good. Yeah,
another one that I remember because my mom showed me all of the original Twilight Zone episodes when I was a kid, and Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge blew my mind, still does. And that one, it was made as a short film.
They used it.
Yeah, and it won an Academy Award. It won like Best International Academy Award, and then they just put it in the show. But it's a man who is being hung for these crimes, and right as they're hanging him, the rope snaps, and he dives into the river and runs away with his family and lives a happy life. And then, oh, man, the ending just blew. I'm going to cry.
You know where I saw that?
Where?
Film the first time? And I'm a Twilight Zone fanatic, as people know, but that's not the first time I saw it. I saw it in seventh grade homeroom. The teacher showed us.
So wacky.
I bawled my eyes out when I saw that but the first like, time.
I keep you guys busy for a half hour. Let me show you a occurrence that I'll creep.
My memory wasn't a scary one. Mine was a mind-blowing. It's the one that I've remembered most all these years. Like, and it's from 80s Twilight Zone again because, you know, just because of the age. I got to the black and white ones later. But it was actually the one, the box, you know, where the guy knocks on your door and says, if you push this button, you guys are going to get $100,000 or $1 million, whatever it is. And they have to weigh up the moral dilemma because it was the first time I think as a young person I thought about, oh, like, of course you're going to do that. And then you start thinking about the moral consequence
that
of
someone
the thing.
Else will
well, no,
die.
No, yeah, so, I'm still
oh,
going.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, you're weighing it up. And then, of course, when they leave, once you've decided if you push that button, somebody dies, sure. And then the box goes to the next family. And guess who's going to die when they push that button? You know it's going to be your ass. You don't know that while you're watching. But once you start putting – it's like when the Twilight Zone – they're the kind of episodes that are most like Black Mirror where it's about that something modern and some moral consequence to what you're doing. But as a probably 12-year-old, whatever it was, the first time I think my brain was engaged in that way and it was TV.
Sure.
And then Richard Kelly, you know, made the feature version of that and it just
he
complicates it by going to space and doing all that other stuff. What? But it's such a simple story. It's just a box and a button.
Weird,
you know, that's it's a great show. I don't know how it's aged in terms of the way it shot and when it was shot, but when I saw it, it got me, you know?
Okay.
Smart.
Cool.
Movie.
Wow.
What about you, Darren?
Well, mine, I can't send you guys, go see this because it will not have the same effect on you. You have to be a little kid when you see this. But even though Twilight Zone is my favorite television show of all time and an obsession, none of them really terrified me to where I couldn't go to sleep at night. Mm. And this episode of Night Gallery called Green Fingers did that to me.
Huh.
And basically, Green Fingers stars Elsa Lanchester, Bride of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. She's an old woman now. And Cameron Mitchell wants the house she's in. He's bought up the neighborhood. He wants to develop it. He's a businessman. She won't sell because she has a garden. And what he does is he sends thugs to attack her so she'll move. And they cut one of her fingers off. This is like, you know, the leg breakers. Well, she's an old lady. Let's just cut her finger off. And you got to move. Well, she went out into the garden, buried her finger amongst all the other things she was growing, and then she dies. And Cameron Mitchell takes over the house, and one night he hears a sound, and he goes in, and it's Elsa Lanchester. And at the time, now I look back at it, it looks kind of cheesy. But at the time, she's sitting there, and she's covered with plants and vines.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, I forget what she says to him. But
I don't remember it. Yeah. She says, "Welcome to hell, motherfucker." And then you stole that shit.
But the end was so spooky and had such resonance with me. And it's one of the reasons we cast Cameron Mitchell in From a Whisper to a Scream. At the end, when he sees her come back, his mind snaps. He just, like, used to happen in movies all the time. People's minds would snap.
Right.
Well, it was always Vincent Price.
It was like instant.
Yeah.
And he comes outside and he says, "You know, from small oak acorns, mighty oaks grow."
Oh.
That's a fact. But do you know what grow from an old lady finger? Old lady. And
that's it. That's
I would get in bed at night, be under the covers, and if there was any kind of pile of stuff in the room, it became Elsa Lanchester.
I've been thinking about digging in Night Gallery. Now you're giving me a reason.
Yeah, I definitely watched it too. Yeah,
some of them are really scary.
Yeah.
Still,
in prep for the TV one, I think we should all look at like Night Gallery. Thriller was another one. Pigeons from Hell is one of my favorite segments of Boris Karloff hosted Thriller.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff out there. Sometimes they would last one season, so you'd have to dig around.
Yeah.
That was a great ending story. I love that. That's
yeah. We'll have to invest investigate. I'll have to dig into TV stuff before we do that episode.
Yeah.
give us next year. Homework.
Next year. Yeah, right. Next year.
Give me a year. Yeah. That's a lot of TV.
1 year from today, folks.
Yeah. Mark your calendars. Somebody's actually marking their calendar, excited about that.
TV episode, big red circle around it.
That was awesome, Darren. That was
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining. That was a lot of fun. Fun
yeah,
assessment.
It was a blast.
You know, and Darren Scott. Tales from the Hood coming out from Scream Factory. Yay! April 18th. Can't wait for it, man.
And check out Whisper to a Scream. It's
also
amazing.
Out now.
Yeah.
And a little secret, you'll be seeing some more anthology material from me very soon.
You heard it here first, baby. Can't wait. All righty. See you guys next week.
See you next week.
All right.